I think they like you, Steve.
Thursday, okay? Just remember Thursday. Thursday. Can you remember Thursday?
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
It's the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Place 611, hi, Steve Cochran Show, 1,248 at Cochran Show on Twitter. Leave it up, Joe, at Cochran Show on Twitter, Facebook.com, Steve Cochran Show. And then this happens.
Goodbye, baby. Yes, I'm going. Yes, I'm going. Goodbye, baby. Yes, I'm going.
As you wake up this morning, another bomb package has been discovered in New York in the Tribeca neighborhood, specifically addressed to Robert De Niro. You may remember that not only has De Niro been specifically critical of the president, I believe he F-bombed the president at one point.
Right. I thought it was just for Meet the Fockers.
The sequel was worthy of punishment, yeah, but not right. at this
not
level.
At this level.
Yeah. These pipe bombs, none of them have detonated. None of them appear to, outside of the George Soros one, that's the one that was detonated, appears to have postmarks on them, which would lead one to believe they were stamped but then dropped off by hand somewhere. All of that has to be figured out. The one that was found this morning at De Niro's Tribeca Film Offices, where his restaurant is located as well in New York City, it would make me think I wouldn't want to open Alec Baldwin's mail today.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it's spreading out to celebrities and those who have insulted the president in the eyes of this nut who is sending these packages out, that would raise alarms. So far, nothing in Chicago. There was a package in L.A. at the office of Congresswoman Maxine Waters. I would assume there's extra security around Rahm Emanuel this morning, as there should be.
We have counted, Steve, in the newsroom now. This is 9 packages. There's also one to Joe Biden that we can add to the list.
So. I thought that was a rumor. Is that confirmed?
No, that is confirmed. Yep.
Okay. So 9 total, and all of them share one similarity. They've all been hard on the president, and the president's been hard on them. So words matter, and we'll get into that a little deeper in a little bit. But let's do the top 6 at 6.
In the lovely Sunrise Hotel. It's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Don't kick. Get your kicks.
With the top 6 at 6. Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling. The 60 Minute Men.
Continuing with the pipe bomb story. The fact that none of them went off is, of course, an interesting part of the story. A great part of the story because... nobody was injured. But was this person either an incompetent bomb maker, didn't know what they were doing, and we got lucky that none of them went off accidentally, or are they just sending a message?
Yeah, I don't know. That's the part of the story I'd like to know is how serious, I mean, it's obviously very serious, but the, you know, whether or not these things were intimidation or if they actually were plan to go off at some point.
Well, they were bombs, right? I mean, so they were attempted assassinations. I mean, you could say if they would have went off, they would have killed people.
But my question being, were they, like Steve said, were they active? Could they go off?
Doesn't change the crime. The crime is still attempted murder. But did they have the power supply, the triggering device, the explosives in them? And obviously we won't know that until the police release that information, which they're not going to do until they believe they found all the packages. This appears to either be someone appearing not to be a genius intentionally or someone who's clearly not a genius. Misspelled packages, all with the same 6 stamps on them, all in the same manila envelopes. It's almost like they're designed to be found.
Well, I can't remember a time in my life where we've had 9 bombs. We have a bomb. This guy's making bombs somewhere, so there's a bomb factory somewhere. What's he going to do next, or she? This is a very serious situation. I hope you guys aren't trying to downplay the seriousness of
why would you think we're trying to downplay
it? Just well, when you say this is, you know, maybe it's sent the message, sending a message. I mean, the message here is he wanted to kill somebody.
The fact is, We don't know if this person's trying to send a message. We don't know if this person intended to kill somebody. That's why the discussion's happening, and that's an active discussion going on in the New York Police Department as well.
I think, Steve, that you're absolutely right. I mean, it's attempted murder. So regardless of semantics, it is serious in the way that whoever did this is doing heinous crimes.
I know that the woman on the return address is not involved, but what's her?
She's the DNC chair, or the former DNC chair.
DNC chair
when they leaked those emails during the Trump campaign, or the 2016, she was considered to be, I guess, the spokesperson for the Democratic Party at that point?
Yeah, DNC head speaking for the Democratic Party until she was removed at the convention in 2016.
She's very disliked by the right because there's feeling that she rigged the election for Hillary Clinton.
As this day goes forward, one of the things that certainly will be discussed is the president's reaction to it, and just again, basic human decency. You have two former president's offices.
Yeah.
Even if one package was directed at Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton live together. That's two attempted assassinations of former presidents. Trump doesn't even pick up the phone, as far as we know, and call either one of them to say, whatever you need, whatever we can do, we're going to do everything we can to make sure you're protected. That's just one of the drop balls. And then last night at his rally in Wisconsin, he blamed the media.
Well, he also did that thing he did with Charlottesville, which is alarming for the president, to have a very specific, eloquent, and I think thoughtful approach to democracy and civility, and we have to come together. And this is a heinous crime, and we're going to prosecute to the extent. But both sides.
Yeah, that's one of the talking points this morning, is that both sides. I'm hearing that on
he said, oh, but,
stations.
You know, and mobbing people and not letting them go to restaurants, that's a problem, too. And I was like, I don't understand why you, I mean, I guess I understand. It's
well, listen, I have a scorecard. I have a personal scorecard. Heckling somebody at dinner, as opposed to sending someone a bomb that could kill them, those are two different things.
Yeah, rhetoric and attempted murder are two different things.
Yeah, and I will say, you know, just as if, and this is a political thing, and it continues to be, to politicize this, it's obviously directed at one political party, but it's obviously someone who is unhinged and not representative of the right wing or the conservative politics or someone who even believes those things. And it's the same on the left when you start talking about mobs and you start talking about Antifa and representing everybody on the left. These are the outliers. These are not the represent. They're
the farthest of the right, the farthest
of the farthest. And I caution everybody today to make it seem as if to also recognize that someone who is sending pipe bombs is not the rule. It's the exception.
Next, political disaster in Honduras. The migrant caravan making its way through Mexico began with a bunch of activists and politicians in Honduras who wanted to damage the country's government. The violence and poverty that's expelling us, call to join the caravan said. And those who have left are, in most cases, people who had nowhere else to go and were threatened with things like having their children kidnapped, drug lords threatening to murder them, and that's why they are on the run, or on the walk in this case, as that continues. Next, CTA had to cancel a series of rides on its retro 4000 series trains cars yesterday because of mechanical issues. Cars are from 1923, amongst the first to operate on the system. The agency had planned to temporarily put them back into service as part of the 75th anniversary of the State Street Subway opening on Wednesday, but had to cancel the rides due to mechanical issues. Well, you know, they're 95-year-old cars. So, I don't know, maybe get new cars. So, it's just a thought.
They like the classic. They're retro.
Have you seen them?
I have seen them.
Are they cool looking?
They are. Yeah. They look old, though. You know, they don't look like Pottery Barn remade old, you know, like.
You pick about restoration hardware?
Yeah.
Yeah. Next. Elmhurst musicians hitchhiking in Australia got a kind of a cool thing yesterday, or day before yesterday. This particular musician is a guy named Scott Hildebrand. He's 27, and he's hitchhiking in Australia, and his parents are somewhere in Illinois going, oh, my God, I can't believe he's hitchhiking in Australia. He's hitchhiking in Australia, and a car pulls over.
He was saving $60 from a bus ride.
Yeah. And a car pulls over, and in the car is Thor, Chris Hemsworth. And
his personal trainer, of course, because he travels with his personal
trainer. Right, because you may need a workout while you're driving.
Yeah.
You don't stay in that kind of shape by taking time off. Hemsworth, known for being Thor in several movies, posted a video of the encounter with Scott Hildebrand on his Instagram account. It's been viewed over 2 million times in the last 24 to 48. And it's a cool story.
I like it because Scott didn't know who he is because he said, I'm terrible with pop culture. And then he offered to give them $40 for gas money. And they're like, well, it'll be more like $4,000 because he didn't know they were going to get on a helicopter. So
right.
It's pretty cool.
That is a cool story. Anybody on the show ever hitchhike other than me?
Hey, you know, when I was in high school, because everybody did back then.
Mm-hmm.
But for, I don't know, a couple miles. I mean, yeah. That's...
I only did it a couple of times, and it's really stupid.
Yeah, oh yeah. But it was pretty common. But I will say...
Well, there were shows on the radio then, and this station may have had one. I certainly know XRT and places like mm-hmm. that had one. The Hitching Post.
Right.
Those type of shows. Like, Dave needs a ride to San Francisco.
Right.
Is anyone going to San Francisco? And then they would pick up Dave on a particular corner.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of... It was our Uber.
It actually was.
I come from a generation where it was more like, I'm in Wicker Park and I need to get to Wrigleyville, and someone's at a stoplight, and I'm like, are you going north? Like is that hitchhiking?
That's more commandeering, isn't it?
A 14 block ride.
Did you ever do it in college where you were posted something and said, I need a ride to ISU and your U of I or something?
The little perforated strips of paper on the bottom.
Yeah, I remember seeing those, yeah.
Oh my gosh, I did that one time. Oh boy.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Well, I never even considered that as hitchhiking because it was organized. I mean, it was on a photocopied piece of paper.
Yeah, I did not know the people I went with, and luckily they turned out to be nice, and I was really stupid.
That's what Chris Hemsworth said. He goes, oh, I picked up a hitchhiker, and he's not a serial killer. You know, turns out he's a good musician. That's what he wrote on the caption.
Next. Google's going to add a big block of office space next to the near the Fulton Market District, including making a point, frankly. There's no let-up in growth in that part of Chicago. Do you own your place over there?
I do.
It's a good time to own it.
I think it was his wife's idea. I think she's the one that had the foresight.
Yeah. Right. I hope they expand that cafeteria, too. There's a nice cafeteria in that building.
Is that a public cafeteria?
No. That's the one that we were talking about, that Google has a cafeteria there that they give free food to their employees so they don't have to leave the neighborhood.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And actually give money to the neighborhood.
Lastly, Pat Brady returns to the program today, and as far as we know, he has not lost his current phone. That's our final item.
That's it!
That's all today for the Top 6 at 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
All right, Steve, we'll update you on the latest package bombs that have been found in New York City. Robert De Niro and Vice President Biden, though I don't know if that's the New York office. It's probably D.C. But anyway, Steve will update you in a couple of minutes. Tom's at Tinley Park. Tom, you're hitchhiking. Do you need a ride?
Yes. No, I don't need a ride now. I'm old. I can't hitchhike. Only young kids can hitchhike.
Did you hitchhike?
Yes, sir.
What's the longest ride you took?
I don't know how many miles it was. We hitchhiked from Champaign. I was at school down there at U of I in the 60s. It was 67, 66. We hitchhiked from Champaign all the way down to Brownsville, Texas, and back.
Yeah, that's a good route.
Is that a good one?
Yeah, and usually if you jump in the cab with a trucker, they're exceptionally friendly. Because
right.
I love truckers.
Well, we hitchhiked
truckers.
With cars. We never did. But we were at a railroad yard one place. I don't know what we did. The guys in the railroad said, you want to hitchhike on the railroad? We said, no, that's not a good idea. I don't. But some interesting stories, to say the least, the places we stayed, the places we slept, how we ate.
It all comes down to one question, Tom. It's one umbrella, right? It's I can't believe I did that.
Yeah.
And I would never let my kid do that. Thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
My dad's big story, he tells us all the time, is he hitchhiked from Chicago to California, L.A. That's the big story that continually gets brought up.
Can you imagine letting your kid do that today? And by the way, they'd probably be fine. But it's just not happening.
Yeah.
It's just not happening. We'll check and see where Pat Brady and Eric Adelstein hitchhiked, because that's going to be the focus, obviously. Text question, I can't believe I did that, and I'd never let my kid do that. Does that work? Yeah, 312-981-7200. I can't believe I did that, and I'd never let my kid do that.
Or
312-981-7200.
Can you give us a ride?
We won't be hitchhiking today. Chuck Todd's coming up, and Sheriff Tom Dart is coming up as well. Adelstein and Brady after 7, Coach Q after 8. swap meet after 9. All this morning on 720 WGN.
This is a very divided time. It's a polarized time. But violence is never okay. And it doesn't matter where on the political spectrum it comes. These bombs that were apparently sent to Soros and Obama and Clinton, that's deeply troubling. It on its face appears to be a terrorist act. I hope the terrorist is caught and is prosecuted and sent away to jail for a long, long time.
Friends with the monsters.
Oh, he's a monster.
Ted Cruz talking to Chuck Todd yesterday and didn't exactly, say, hey, yes, this must stop. Chuck Todd joins us now. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning to you.
Welcome back to the program. And
thank you. It's been a little while.
Hope you're well. I would assume since NBC News has been, at the receiving end of a lot of Trump heat, that things are a little cautious around the building this morning.
Well, I've been traveling all week. I was in Texas yesterday, so I'm in New York today. Yes, I know we've put in some more precautions. I haven't been at the office, so I haven't seen it particularly, but for what it's worth, I haven't opened my own mail at NBC in at least 3 years. So we've put precautions in. Don't forget, we had anthrax in our mail room. Yep. Right after 2001. So we have had, in particular, talent that receives any threat has had sort of extra checks in their mail for quite some time.
You know, we've talked about this many times. We've changed the level of acceptability since 2016 in my opinion, negative way. And last night at the rally in Wisconsin, the latest rally, President Trump again did not take any responsibility for his side of this, but he did take an opportunity while saying a few presidential things to say the media has got to watch what they say and watch what they do. If the media is reporting the president's actions, that's news. That's not a shot at the president. And I'm more convinced than ever he doesn't understand that.
Well, I think if he had said Fox and said the media has to watch what they say, I think that it would have been a more accurate statement. In fairness to him, which media is he referring to? If he is referring to the Hottest Rated Cable Channel, cable news channel, then yes, they have a lot of work to do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they when you look at all the people that are targeted by this wacko, they're people that are regularly railed on in prime time on that network. I'm not sitting here making a connection, but if the president is going to lecture the media, I assume that's who he'd lecture, because they're the only ones that have seems to be stoking that flame.
Well, you assume that in a normal world, which we don't live in anymore.
I am. Perhaps I'm being facetious, but I'll let others decide that.
Justin, say hi to Chuck.
Hey Chuck. This, as you mentioned anthrax and some of the threats that were mm-hmm. levied at NBC and others a couple years back now. Is this surprising to you when you have this kind of obvious domestic terrorism with this heated rhetoric? Or is this something you've seen before, obviously, but does it surprise you in 2018?
You know, that's what's amazing. You know, Ben Howe, a conservative writer, tweeted, isn't it amazing that 5 years ago, a series of alleged pipe bombs showing up in the mail addressed to elected officials, we immediately would have assumed ISIS or Al-Qaeda as a country.
Right.
It wouldn't have been. And what happened, everybody immediately assumed domestic terrorism. Essentially domestic political terrorism. And the fact that that's how conditioned we've become as a society to assume, we're quite capable of this now, I think shows you how far down this rabbit hole we've gone. So I wasn't surprised, even as I'm still sort of shell-shocked at how this is becoming normalized.
And because of the normalization of this, the danger from it continues. And, we don't have leaders that people trust right now to back down the heat, especially if the president's not going to say the right thing.
No, and I'm really concerned. I feel like I've watched some of the political actors on social media over the last 24 hours on this. It seems like there's a lot of people that are more concerned about expressing their victimhood than trying to look in the mirror and be reflective. people are being deflective about all this and not reflective. And it's just, you know, the pains that I had to play a little bit of Senator Cruz, the pains that he took not to call on the president to show any leadership on this was just very disappointing, because at the end of the day, whoever was president right now, to me, would have an obligation to take the lead on this. You're president of the United States. You have no choice. You're the highest elected official. You have to be the person that tries to tamp this down, figure out a way to bring the country together. Yes, we know that this is, you know, that's not how he parked. He didn't get to the presidency by being a unifier. In some ways, he got there by sort of dividing and conquering. So I understand it's politically sort of, it doesn't fit in some ways, and I get that. But if not him, who? That's the problem. If not him, who?
Yeah, and by not saying anything instructive last night other than what he said at the rally, nothing changes. Nothing changes from yesterday to today. There's nothing that he said last night or has said so far that would make some lunatic go, okay, I better stop. Nothing.
Sadly, he might be more concerned about this if it was somebody he supported that was targeted. I mean, that's what it comes across as. That's what it comes across as. There's more concern when a Republican was targeted than when a Democrat was targeted. And that's where we're just going, how have we gone off the rails like this?
You know, reports we've seen so far say he did not reach out to President Obama or to Hillary Clinton or to Bill Clinton in either case. It's a very small club, the President's Club. And in some of the most contentious times when a former president was a subject of any sort of threat or any sort of news or any sort of stress, the current president picks up the phone and calls and says, we've got your back, whatever you need, and I want you to know that I'm concerned about you. Did that happen?
We have not had any confirmation that the president has called any of the people that were targeted, let alone the former president. I will remind you that Bill Clinton sent fighter jets to bomb Iraq in response to an assassination attempt against George H.W. Bush.
Right. Right. I mean, you know, there's responsibility that just is not being lived up to, again.
The president, I mean, the office of the presidency is not partisan.
It's an attack
on America.
And for everybody that says somebody's going to die next time, I'd remind you, somebody already did. Heather Heyer died a little over a year ago at the race riot.
And I'll remind you that a journalist died, Jamal Khashoggi.
Exactly.
And it's not a big leap for me to wonder that Saudi Arabia's boy king there thought he could get away with it because we didn't value journalists.
I'm sure this will be MTP Daily's focus, depending on something that anything else that happens during the day today. And
well, we do have a midterm election to cover, and it is sort of an extraordinary midterm that we're about to see. Probably the highest turnout, not just in our lifetime, but perhaps the highest turnout by percentage since 1914. Think about that.
I hope you're right, man. I hope you're right.
And strange things happen the more people turn out. I will tell you that.
Right. No question about it. Thank you, Chuck.
Yeah. Guys.
Chuck Todd, MSNBC's MTP Daily, Meet the Press, and the 1947 podcast.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
.653. Well, the nuttiness of the world continues. There's good things happening everywhere, and a very important one today as we bring in Sheriff Tom Dart. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Steve. How are you doing today?
Doing fine. Your friend Pat Brady's in studio. Say hello to Pat.
I'm sorry to hear he's with you again, Steve. I'm sorry. I apologize up front.
Hey, hey Pat. Sheriff, good to see you. I love that bologna sandwich you gave me this morning in the lockup.
That's the one you stole it, I think.
Always taking care of the residents. Look, we know, and you've been very outspoken about this, we know the opioid crisis in Illinois is as bad as it is everywhere. So tell everybody what's happening today.
Well, you know, the thing that we're doing today is somewhat remarkable in the sense that with no threats or anybody holding their breath, a CVS pharmacy in our office have entered this joint program where they're going to put on all of their prescriptions that they send out in Cook County, all their prescriptions are going to have attached to it a leaflet, a flyer, a notice on the fact that the sheriff's office has a drug take-back program, which is ridiculously significant, Steve, when you look at the fact that under most analysis, they say that about 90% of the people that get hooked on heroin started with prescription drugs. Right. And how that plays out is they, you know, someone had a oxycodone prescription and they only used a couple and they left it in their medicine cabinet. A teenager or a 20-year-old knows it, they grab it, and that's how they go down the path. People steal those, they sell them, all the rest of it. So the key thing is when people don't need those medications anymore, you know, what is it they do with them? And by turning it into us, we dispose of it properly. If you dump it in the, you know, like the toilet, it also really screws up our water system as well. So we've operated almost 150 sites, the sheriff's office alone, in Cook County for the last few years. And just last year, we collected over 11,000 pounds of pharmaceuticals. This year, we're on record to break that one. But with this effort, Steve, this is huge, because right now, it's difficult to get the word out to people to say, listen, these drugs are getting in the wrong people's hands. They're killing people. Please turn in the ones you don't need, and we'll dispose them for you. So how better could you do it than have it go out with a prescription? I mean, this is huge.
And CVS deserves a lot of credit. Let's go to Pooja Patel here, district leader, manager. I'm not sure what your title is, Pooja, but thank you for doing this.
Hello, good morning. And yes, absolutely. This, to Sheriff Dart's point, you know, recent survey was done, and we have 6.2 million Americans misuse controlled prescriptions. So it's very important, and given the extent of the opioid epidemic, and not only in Illinois and across the country, it is critical that patients understand the need to dispose of unused medications in a timely and safe manner.
Yeah, so either one of you grab this. What do people do? If they have, if they're listening now, they didn't know about this, how do they get them back to you and back to the Sheriff's Department?
You know, Steve, it's actually quite easy. With the notice that CVS is doing, which, as I said, they don't have to do this. They're just really good corporate citizens here. They'll be able to get in touch with us so that they'll be able and go on our website to locate the nearest turn-in facility. And as I say, we have 150 spread throughout the county already, and we're going to add more of them. They're ridiculously convenient. All you have to do, a lot of them are in, like, police stations, and they're and then some of them are in actually stores as well, in like pharmacies as well. It looks like a mailbox. You walk in, you put the prescription in there, and then we take it from there. We collect it on a regular basis. Then we have a proper place where we destroy it. But it literally couldn't be any simpler than going about this route.
And Pooja, the thousands and thousands and thousands of prescriptions that you guys do, for every flyer that's attached means somebody's going to get that notice. They could pass it on to friends or use it themselves to get this done. So thanks to CVS, Pooja, please pass that along.
I definitely will. Thank you.
And thanks, Sheriff Tom Dart. Thanks for jumping on, man.
Oh, please. Thanks for having me on. Take care.
See you later. 657. It's a good idea, kids. A very good idea. And thanks to both parties for getting it done. Coming up, Stories of Matter with Steve Grzanich from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Seven oh eight. Obviously, we got one eye all morning, and for as long as it takes on New York City in particular. But what's happening with these mail bombs that are being sent out? This guy, I assume it's a guy. It's unfair to do that, I suppose. But the individual will be caught. It's just a matter of when. If they don't do themselves in before then. But for those of you who may have missed the news just a moment ago, we wake up this morning to another package, this one sent to Robert De Niro's office in Tribeca in New York. And overnight, apparently, Vice President Biden received one as well. The other thing that came up earlier of slightly lesser importance is the text question of the day. We were talking about hitchhiking in the first hour. Hitchhiking. We used to do all the time, hitchhiking. Hitchhiking was a mode of transportation. I thought Dave put it very well when he said it was our Uber.
It was
exactly right.
Although I would now that I've said it, I kind of regret it. If my dad's listening this morning online,
which I know he does,
Dad, it was years ago.
Yeah.
So
you don't do it anymore, do you?
No, I've stopped.
You have your own car?
I've stopped, yes.
My mom, who is the same age as Dave Bennett, she hitchhiked once when she was 18, and so she would always tell me, I did it once, it's not safe, don't ever do it.
I did it when I was seven.
So seven?
Wow.
Were you running away from home?
No, I won a McDonald's hamburger from 1470 WTKO in Ithaca. My brother and I and my cousin decided to go. I don't know. I guess we thought we were going to split the hamburger three ways. We hitchhiked to the radio station, which was easily 15 miles from where we lived, and then got the coupon thing, and then we had to come up with a dollar for the other 50-cent hamburgers.
What's the one thing from that experience you remember? What's the one thing about the car and the hitch and the driver?
Was driving,
The odor in the car was fairly distinct. But then on the way to McDonald's, we ended up walking like a mile. And somebody that worked with my father saw us. And when I got home that night, my father said, did you have a nice day at school? Yeah, I didn't go to school today. We were home. That's how he sounded when I was seven. And he said, do anything fun today? Because we didn't talk a whole lot, so I knew something was up. And then he said, whatever his friend's name was, had seen Mickey and I and cousin John hitchhiking. He wasn't so pleased. That would have been 1969, I suppose.
Oh.
Yeah. Ah, things are different then, kids. Here's a few. 630, hitchhiked Oakland to Chicago in 1974. Never thought twice about it. 217, hitchhiked. I'm a college girl from Iowa State University to Connecticut to see my parents for a weekend with two suitcases and a kitten. 406, Brian from Montana. I can't believe that I jumped my bicycle off the roof of my house. I'd never let my kids or grandkids do this today. That's the text question. I can't believe I did it, and I'd never let my kids do it. 815, can't believe I got married at 18. I wouldn't let my kids do that. And I'm still married 50 years later. 815, when I was in high school, I was driving with my sister and mother to New Haven, Connecticut to attend an event in Yale where my brother was in school. We picked up a hitchhiker somewhere in Pennsylvania, and we're so tired we let him drive. Stuff that doesn't happen today. Allow me to introduce to you the most valuable person on the planet for Thursday, October 25th, 2018, because bullies are a problem that is still an ever-present part of our world. Something must be done. And that's why I'd like to introduce to you Aubrey Fontenot of Houston. Good morning, Aubrey.
Good morning. I'm glad you said my name right, by the way.
Yes, so am I, Aubrey. It's an honor to have you on the show. Tell me what's going on with your 8-year-old.
As of right now, or are you just...
No, I mean with the incident, the incident-specific thing.
Basically, in a nutshell, he was getting, you know, picked on at school. It had been kind of like an ongoing thing by this young man, Tamarian. Tamarian's a lot bigger than my son. And my son had previous issues at school.
Right.
With other students where he had to kind of defend himself and whatever. You know, they're boys. You know, boys, you know, they're getting the stuff. And, you know... Well, when it came to Tamarian, I just kind of told him to just chill out. I was like, you know what, dude? It's not worth getting in trouble. It's not worth all that stuff, man. Just relax. I'll take care of it, you know. But it still continued. I went to the school. I said, hey, can y'all do something about it? They're like, oh, yeah, we're going to take care of it. But nothing too much really happened. If something, another situation happened again, and then another situation. And my son's phone came up missing. And then at this point, I'm like, okay, now I'm hot. I'm mad. And I think I kind of, my initial thought process when I went into the school to kind of talk, to figure out what was going on was the same as any parent. I was tired. I wasn't feeling the kid. I wasn't feeling, you know.
You're frustrated.
The school. Yeah, I was just frustrated. And when I got to the school, they kind of just they had pity on the kid, and I was like, "Why are y'all acting like this? Like y'all acting like he's not doing something bad. He's bullying my son,
right?"
And they kind of just insinuated, you know, they didn't really tell me, but they kind of just hinted off that, you know, hey, you know, he's you know, he's homeless. And I was like, oh.
And that's when, if I have the story right, you decided to talk to the mom, and the mom mm-hmm. told you they were going through bad times, and you volunteered mm-hmm. to talk to the boy, to Marion, and mom said yeah. that was okay, and you dealt with this with kindness as opposed to putting a hammer down, because all of us admit, there's a couple lessons here, obviously, one of which is don't assume that you know what's happening, because this kid, to Marion, not excusing the bullying, but this kid obviously was angry, he was hurting, he didn't know what to do about it, and some of that came out in how he treated your son. So after you talked to Marion, what happened?
After I talked to him, I told him that, because, you know, we were basically in the middle of the process of punishment as far as school goes,
right?
You know, because the cops were up there. They wanted to, you know, he's at that age where, you know, that he could go to jail if I had pressed charges. But I had told him that I was like, look, you go find my son's phone, and I'll make all this stuff go away. No suspension, no cops, no nothing. You know, and you know, he kind of admitted to me that he took. That's when he admitted that he did take the phone. He did hide it somewhere. And so I was like, can you go find it? He said, I'm going to try. And he went, and he said somebody else, he thinks somebody else took the phone. He said he was scared that he was going to get in trouble. And I was like, okay, all right, that's fine. I understand. I can understand that. But I was like, since we can't get the phone back on Monday when you're suspended, how you can repay me is you can come spend time with me and just talk to me. And I asked his mom if that was okay. She said, yeah, that sounds like a plan. The school was like, you know what? That sounds like a great idea to me. And so when Monday came around, I picked him up. And, you know, we just talked for hours. We talked for some hours. And then eventually, you know, I was like, you know what? I'm going to do you a solid if you do me a solid. If I take you shopping, because that's what the kids were making fun of, is clothes, his shoes, is sure. all that stuff.
Right.
I was like, if I take you shopping, you got to sit down with my son, and y'all got to talk, and y'all got to kill all this, you know, BS that y'all got going on. And he was like, I got you. I was like, okay, I got you then. Let's go. And I took him shopping. And throughout the day, I kind of just taught him about morals.
Talked about life.
Talked about life.
Talked about anger, what to do with your anger. Talked about not letting other people bring you down. And again, if I have the story right, today, after using kindness, which is a great lesson for your son as well, put good things out in the world, good things come back to you. Today, the two boys are friends, right?
That is correct.
You know what, Aubrey, you're a good man. You're a good man. You're a good dad. You ought to be proud of yourself.
Oh, thank you, man. It's been a long journey.
Well, I'll tell you, a lot of people would have handled it differently and would have taken it out on the mom or the family, and you had the patience not to. So I'm impressed. I really am. Hold on a second, Aubrey, if you would. It's Aubrey Fontenot. I mean, is it any question that guy's the most valuable person on the planet? Come on.
That's great.
By the way, there's a GoFundMe campaign to help Tamarian's family, if you're interested. Tamarion, or Aubrey Fontenot, is listed in there as well, just as a reference for the story, Fontenot. And to date, they've raised $24,000 to help the family. The original goal was $7,000. There's a lot of good going on, even in a world of bad.
Listen to Pat Brady.
Listen to Pat Brady.
He's really going to blow your mind because he's seldom wrong, just right. Yeah. Listen to Pat Brady.
We're going to play Pat's theme song before Edelstein arrives in the room because Eric's upset that he doesn't have a theme song.
He's actually like down the hall, so I hope he didn't hear that.
Oh, no. Oh, no, no. Pat, did you ever hitchhike?
No, but I did something dumber than that.
Seriously? Central Illinois, you never hitchhiked?
No, this is what we used to do as the bottom of the class rank. I grew up in Bloomington. The train line, the freight trains used to run through town. And my buddy Mark Moore and I used to hop the freight train, take a ride through town. I mean, what could go wrong?
What could go wrong?
Oh, you jumped on the train like a hobo?
Yeah, but just on the, you hang onto the ladder.
Did you have the stick with the bandana on the back, on the end?
No, we just got, because then the guy would figure it out. The guy in the caboose. And they
one of your friends, by the way, texted from the 708, hopped a train in Crete, didn't get off until Tampa. I was 18. I was dumb.
Huh. What could go wrong?
The text question of the day, again, is, I can't believe I did it, and I'd never let my kids or my grandkids do it. 312-981-7200. Good morning, Eric Edelstein as well.
Morning.
How are you?
I'm good.
Eric, right. We're asking people if you've ever hitchhiked.
You know, I have not. I was so sort of scared straight by my parents about two things. One, riding a motorcycle, and two was hitchhiking. The fear of, like, there's creeps out there that want to pick up young
boys. You know, and
boys.
There's a phrase that went on when we were kids that you don't hear that much anymore. You got to crack your head open. You got to crack your head open.
Yeah.
Remember crack your head open, Dave? Nobody says crack your head open anymore.
No, no one really does say that.
Remember crack your head open?
Yeah, I did a few times. And man, does your head bleed when it cracks.
It's because we wear helmets now. All the kids wear helmets now. So
right. Kids wear helmets to play chess now. Mm-hmm. Yes, because you can't be too careful.
Remember ramp jumping on your Stingray?
The other thing, remember skitching? Kids would skitch, hold the back of the bumper.
Or riding on the handlebars, too.
And here's the thing.
My dad used to tie the toboggan to the back of the station wagon.
We didn't call it skitching. We called it, what the hell are you thinking? That was the name of it, actually. What the hell are
we
you
had,
thinking?
We had kids where we grew up would just take the car before they were 16 and drive. And my parents always said, you can do that, but you will not get your driver's license until you're 21.
I started driving when I was 14.
You did? Your parents knowing it?
No, of course not.
Yeah, all right.
I drove a stick shift when I was 14.
312-981-7200. That's the number. Text question again. I can't believe I did that. I'd never let my kids or my grandkids do it. What is it? 312-981-7200. Where do you work, Pat?
Next Generation Strategies. Thank you.
And how about you, Eric?
I work at AL Media.
Let's get a plug in here for something going on with Rokan. Pat?
Lincoln Forum this Monday night, the thing Eric and I work together on. I'm going to do it actually from the WGN studios. It's going to be a political reporter panel. It will be moderated by Rokan with Marianne Ahern from Channel 5, great. Craig Wall from Channel 7, and our own Rick Pearson. So that's an all-star panel, and I think we'll get 30 people, and I think we're going to live stream it, and we're excited about that because those are
was
the best.
Was Steve Cochran not available?
I wasn't asked. Yeah, they wanted to go with Ro. By the way, Ro works cheaper. So
I think it's going to be in the performance studio, though. So
yeah, which
really
is
cool
good.
Space.
Oh, that's great. That is very cool.
It's a little past Steve's bedtime.
It's true. If it's 5 o'clock, it's past my bedtime. Text from Donald J. Trump. A very big part of the anger we see today in our society is caused by the purposely false and inaccurate reporting of the mainstream media that I refer to as fake news. It's gotten so bad and hateful that it's beyond description. Mainstream media must clean up its act fast. Less than 24 hours after the bulk of these mail bombs have been found, that's the President of the United States statement. I know we're not surprised, but shouldn't we be pissed off?
It's sad.
That's the President of the United States. That's his response.
It's outrageous because he's stirring the pot. And, you know, you can lay a lot of this at his feet, and it goes well beyond 7 or 9 or 10 pipe bombs. It goes to an increase in racist attacks. It goes to an increase in school incidents of people acting violent for a political or ideological purpose. And he sets a tone, as presidents always do, whether it's good or bad or indifferent. And you have a responsibility. As Chuck Todd just said, there's parts of the office of the presidency that are not partisan. They're American.
And they're not negotiable.
And he doesn't get it.
These duties are non-negotiable. This is what you take when you take the job. You take on the responsibility of not being about you, of about being what's best for the United States of America. He hasn't done it a single day. Every day he's been in office, it's been about Donald Trump.
And I just make one other point is, look, it's always easy when you live in a moment to say, oh, this kind of vitriol or this kind of polarization has never happened in American history. That's not true. What is true is you have to have tempering influences. You have to have voices that say, enough's enough. Let's tamp it down.
Right.
And
keep
that
the flames,
starts with the President of the United States. And if you have the president who's the one fanning the flames rather than calling the fire department, that's a lethal recipe.
And let's go with some gutless leadership here on all four major leaders in Congress who apparently all have terrible colds and laryngitis because nobody has said a word since yesterday. And Schumer and Pelosi are as guilty as this as anybody. All right, Pat, your turn.
Listen, I can't disagree.
It's going to be a boring show, Steve.
Well, no, I mean, there's a tough part of being a conservative.
Never boring, not this year.
A Republican, lifelong Republican conservative. I can't defend this or say this is not what the presidency is about. This is not what Ronald Reagan was about. This is not what Abraham Lincoln was about, our party's most prominent presidents. And I don't understand it, but I listened to this guy for 25 years here on the radio when he's in New York. I understand him. This is what he's all about. And I don't know what damage this does to the country I mean, it's always after the fact, but we're going to have a midterm election here, and we'll see what happens. But I got to say, on the political side of it, the stuff that he's doing has motivated the Republican base like I never thought would happen, and it's basically a dead heat now.
Well, that's counting a typical midterm turnout. I think what Chuck Todd said as well last hour is very important, and that is if the massive turnout happens, and indicators of the absentee voting and the early voting are, we are headed for a massive turnout for a midterm. Anything's possible. Yes, you're raising your hand, young man?
I am going to contradict the fact that this is going to be a nice show. What polls are you looking at that shows it a dead heat? Where are you living?
Well, which ones do you want to talk about?
The ones that say it's a dead heat in terms of intensity and in terms of generic preference.
And as you know, the way that the maps are drawn now, the gerrymandering, the maps, Democrats need to be about 5 or 6 ahead, and they're right now they're about 4 or 5. The enthusiasm, the president's poll numbers, even the Democrats on I watch the liberal stations just because I want to be informed as what the liberals are saying.
The liberal
what
stations.
What are the liberal stations?
The MSNBC. Hold on a second. I can hear the excuse fairies already coming out.
The liberal
stations. I was in a band called the excuse fairies.
Last night, the excuse fairies are dusting off their wings because I heard all of them saying, well, the House now is a coin toss, and it's all because of gerrymandering and voter suppression. So I think it's a lot closer than people may think.
Hold your fire, fellas. We'll continue in just a couple of minutes.
I'm uncomfortable. I'm seated in between the two of them, and they're looking at each other. It's getting scary over here.
There you go.
It's up to you to defend the integrity of the show.
Well, he wears that military-like jacket. I'm afraid he might have something in that thing.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
I do have a hat.
He's right, carrying a hat.
More of this conversation coming up on the Steve Cochran Show.
I knew Bruce Rauner. Bruce Rauner used to be a friend of mine. This is not Bruce Rauner. And in the desperation of trying to hold out that office, the worst thing you can do is be dishonest with yourself because people will see right through it.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Mayor Rahm Emanuel yesterday on this program talking about Governor Rauner. You can go to WGNradio.com for the full podcast there. It's the first time I've heard him use the phrase, we used to be friends. Because I've suggested that we go to the Billy Goat and we work it all out. But that doesn't appear to be happening anytime soon. Let's start with the governor's race. Pat Brady's here. Eric Edelstein's here. Is this just going to be a money race to the end? Either one of you.
Nobody's speaking.
We're mad at each other. Well, look, it set records for most amount of money spent in history.
About to pass Meg Whitman for the most personally
pass,
funded.
Meg Whitman. It's not a very competitive race. Rauner has had trouble getting oxygen, getting off the mat. You know, the direction of the state is bad. There's a feeling of him being a failed governor, and I think that ad that's been talked about ad nauseum is, you know, a pretty desperate, lame attempt to do something. But I think this is all over but the shouting.
That's what they said about Donald J. Trump, Steve.
Oh, God.
You know, Rauner may be going, don't help me.
I tell you what helps us, though, is the more they put Hillary out there. Boy, talk about motivating Republicans. It's good to see her out in the stump.
She's stumping for Donna Shalala, right?
She's stumping for everybody. It's good to see her out there because that's the future.
It's a different path, but what are the Democrats thinking?
Thinking? We're Democrats. What are you talking about?
The idea that Hillary would be helpful now, I don't think it's a great idea.
Well, I mean, the idea that, like, Democrats have a strategy and are putting...
Yeah, not great.
I mean, this doesn't happen that way. Like, an individual candidate might invite someone to come out and stump and whatnot, so...
But what about beyond the stumping, they're doing the timing of their global Let's Talk tour. The Clintons going out right now to let me finish. Yeah. Why are they doing that? I mean, they're political animals. Don't they get the significance
of that? But I guess you're taking it from a Republican standpoint, so that invigorates your base, but Democrats like Hillary Clinton.
Well, you know,
and they won the popular vote. I don't understand why.
Time out.
They do.
Democrats do not like Hillary Clinton.
Come on.
100 million people didn't show up to vote.
But why that's on Hillary.
A one-term senator from Illinois who'd been in the Senate for 170 days beat her for the Democratic nomination.
Yeah, look,
and the convention rules are
it's easier to make her punching bag. But to Justin's point, she did get 3 million more votes than the guy who's in the White House.
She lost to Donald Trump.
She's stumping
she got
for
3 million more
lost
votes.
To Donald friggin' Trump.
Watch out! I think Donald Trump is going to beat other Democrats as they come up too.
By the way, can I make one other point? She got more votes than any American in American history.
There's
for
more
the presidency.
People. Every time someone cites that, it's more
I'm
people.
Just saying.
I'm just saying for the future of the Democrats.
Yeah.
You really should need a new horse.
Yeah, should give this one up.
Really, I've got. Listen, nobody more qualified. She may have been a great president, but yeah. She lost to Donald Trump.
Yeah,
that's her legacy.
Is that guy still president?
Yeah,
really.
Yeah,
I hadn't checked in a while.
All right, let me talk about the attorney general's race, which normally we would just go.
Yeah.
But this is as interesting as it gets. Kwame Raoul, who I know you work with his campaign, was on the show, was it Tuesday?
Mm-hmm.
Was on with us Tuesday. Thought he handled himself well, even though I don't see him doing a lot of interviews. And, of course, Erica Harold's been on many times, and they're both welcome again. Pat, you know Erica Harold. Why is she good?
I think she's good because, and I think she's had a series of good commercials, she's independent. She's not beholden to anyone, and that's what, in the state, after 16 years of Lisa Madigan, they want a check on the Madigan power, and she is probably one of the best candidates I've ever seen in my life. Smart, Harvard-educated, self-starter, pleasant, and I think, and listen, Kwame's a friend, too, and I know Eric works for him. I really like him, but I think Erica Harold, if she wins, is the face of the Republican Party in the state going forward, and that's going to be a great thing for us.
And Kwame?
Look, he has had a great career. He was tapped to take Barack Obama's state Senate seat when Obama went to the U.S. Senate. He's fought for criminal justice reform, for health care expansion. He's a cancer survivor himself. He's worked on issues of better access for women, protecting the right to choose. And Harold is an impressive woman from the standpoint of what she's accomplished, but she has very extreme views. She's tried to run away from them and said that her views on gay marriage, her views on women not having the right to choose, overturning Roe versus Wade, getting rid of Obamacare. She's tried to say those views aren't relevant to the Attorney General's race, and it's just not true in this moment when you have the Trump Justice Department that's rolling back a lot of rights and state attorney generals are trying to fight back. So it is a really important race, and I think it's a proxy race to the extent, do you like Jeff Sessions and Trump and the direction of the Justice Department, or do you think we should fight back? And I think that's the difference between Raoul and Harold.
I think, and Eric states the argument well, but the reality is I think the perception in the state is Eric is independent. And those issues that Eric talked about, the social issues, which I'm not necessarily disagree or agreeing with the characterization, that's not relevant to the Attorney General's office. They're chief law enforcement officer, legal representative in the state, and she will depoliticize that office much less than it's been under Lisa.
I opened with him with the question of for people that think you're tied to Mike Madigan, how do you prove that you're not? What do you say that you're not? Do you remember how he worded it? I mean, his answer was good. I don't remember the specific wording of it.
He's obviously a Democrat who's had a lot of time in Springfield, but he's a senator.
He's a senator. He's never voted
on the Madigan side.
Never voted for Madigan for speaker.
Okay, but let's not kid ourselves that Mike Madigan doesn't also have influence over the Senate.
Well, I understand, but it's sort of weak soup, this attempt to say he's worked with Madigan to raise property. You know, as Kwame says, they're accusing me in TV ads of property tax appeals. He goes, I've never been at a law firm, had a property tax appeal case. I've never worked with lawyers who do property tax appeals. Yeah. It's just, you know, it's the kind of silliness you see in this political season where every Democrat, in a desperate attempt to win this election, they tie him to Madigan.
So, yeah, give AL Media Strategies credit, too. I'm obviously on the
commercials
other side.
Are great.
But the commercials against Erica Harold have been very, very good. I think Erica's responded nicely in the last couple of weeks, but your commercials have been really good.
Haven't had both candidates on in the last week and a half. They both really want to be attorney general. You asked Kwame and Mia talked to Erica. They're not using it as
stepping stone.
Yeah,
sounds like this is the gig they want.
It's a great job. I mean, you're on the side of angels. You get to defend the citizens of Illinois. All the cases are ones where really bad guys need to be taken on.
You get to punch out both parties.
It's great. It's a great job.
I should have been a lawyer.
It is. I think it's the best job of the constitutional office. But here's the point. This is why I believe that Erica's going to win. We've had an attorney general for the last 16 years whose dad is Speaker of the House. People want some independence, and if it's Pritzker Madigan at the top of the ticket here, they're not going to go down and vote again for another Democrat.
Well, people seem to like Lisa Madigan as Attorney General. She won. She was unopposed. I mean,
she had a 34% approval rating.
But my point, I can't think in my head of times where I felt that conflict of interest with the Madigan name played out.
Well, because she never had really, other than Joe Burkett. If she ever had a tough opponent like she would have in Erica, I could have given you 50 examples of where, most recently, her filing this criminal action or trying to against. against Governor Rauner for what happened in Quincy.
You're hearing a subtle shift in what Pat and the Republicans are doing now. They're basically conceding the governor's race. You hear that, right?
They're saying
she's our only chance to win a Republican office, we need a check on the Pritzker administration now. So.
Pat, is that what you said?
Eric sometimes just doesn't listen. You know, when we go to group, I tell him he didn't listen. I prefaced it with if.
All right, we got to talk about more of this on a national level in just a moment.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Eric Edelstein and Pat Brady are here. And Eric, I wanted to ask you about one of the races that your company is involved with, and that's the Georgia governor's race, where the Republican candidate, the opponent, is apparently in charge of counting the votes. How's that even possible?
It's pretty outrageous. He's the Secretary of State.
But can a Secretary of State recuse himself?
He absolutely can, and he's been called on to do that. He administers the election.
One for me, two for me, three for me.
Well, and the other just really disturbing part is this is probably going to be a very, very close election. They have a runoff provision in Georgia if no one gets to 50%. And there have been calls, bipartisan calls, for him to, you know, just for forget whose side you're on. If you want to feel like the outcome is legitimate, you know, have a neutral party who's going to count these votes. And not only saying that, it's not just the Secretary of State. There have been countless issues throughout his tenure, his career, frankly, where he's been on the side of that voter suppression stuff, where he's tried to...
That's the state where they did the, if you have a mistake in your name, a hyphen, an
couple
address is wrong.
Yeah,
right.
They hold your registration and don't really do anything
and
about
it. And it disproportionately affects people of color. There's just no question about that. They also did things in rural counties where, you know, people don't have cars. They closed a bunch of places because they said they weren't ADA compliant, and then they had to go to federal court and take them out. I mean, he's been really kind of bad. And he gave a speech. He was caught on microphone last week saying, "We're very, very concerned that lots of people may vote in this election."
And this is
that's what he said. He's the Secretary of State.
The conspiracy theory, which is interesting, is that he knew he was running for governor at a certain point, so this was all leading up to knowing he wanted to keep some people from voting against
him.
But
Alabama.
But let me just say this, Steve. This is where journalism and participation still matters. People are paying attention to it. People are talking about it.
I'm glad you said that, because here's the other point of that. Every time you hear the words fake news, punch that individual in the mouth, because that's the country we live in. No, when you hear the words fake news, think about this. The other person in this race, your candidate, is?
Stacey Abrams.
And because of good reporting, not some Facebook post, because of good reporting, it was reported earlier this week, that there was a flag incident with her back in college burning a Confederate-symboled flag, which at one point was part of the Georgia flag. My point being, there's negative reporting when it's appropriate for either side.
Sure. And she doesn't run away from that. Look, she says she engaged in a form of peaceful protest 30 years ago.
And it doesn't mean she hates her state.
Well, and the irony is, Brian Kemp voted to get rid of that flag, too, like a lot of reasonable Georgians did at the time, to say we should not have the Confederate symbol on our state flag. And so it's something that's part of the New South. And to engage in a form of peaceful protest, and then for them to sort of want to use that as an example of being radical or something. It doesn't. That's
it's
not
a
really
young, a young African American college student burning a Confederate flag at college.
By the way,
is
at a time.
Well, keep in mind what you're talking about.
At a time
matter,
when the
Georgia.
White male governor of Georgia was working to get it repealed. So
is it a toss up?
It's a toss up.
Okay, Pat, give me some scope on the national race here. The original thought was the Dems would win 25 to 35, maybe 45 seats in the House. Where do you see that
toss up?
You think it's possible they could control the House?
I think we could keep control. I think the first time I could say that in 6 months. I think some of these suburban races we thought we were going to lose, I don't think we're going to lose. And again, I'm not a fan of Trump, but the things he's doing to motivate the Republicans to get out and vote. And it all depends on who shows up. Eric says this all the time. We don't know. There's going to be a huge turnout, but we don't know who's going to show up.
Yeah. I mean, the data, which, again, I'm always skeptical of, on the polling side, shows, Pat's right to some extent, that there's been a narrowing of the enthusiasm.
That was a concession right there. Write that down.
Narrowing of the enthusiasm gap, but there's still a wide gap that Democrats favor on the enthusiasm. Now, let's get away from the theoretical. Let's get to the actual, because given many states have early voting and vote by mail, you are starting to see lots of ballots come back. And so we're no longer estimating who's coming out, and we still are seeing a Democratic advantage in most places.
If you go to ballotpedia.org or ballotready,
as well. They're both great research sites to do your research. And by the way, you can just print anything off those sites and take it into the voting booth.
Hey, can I say something about Eric's candidate?
Which one?
The one in Georgia.
Uh-huh.
I'm glad she burned that down 30 years ago. I would have gone with her.
I totally agree.
So if she's catching grief for that, good for her.
I would have handed her the lighter.
Yeah.
As the people get closer and closer to Election Day, Sandberg, jump in here.
I was going to say, I already voted. So if you go in early vote, then you can just tune out all of the information that you're hearing from now until that day.
Don't you wonder, though? This is why I don't early
Does
vote,
WGN
too.
Like you saying that?
Don't you wonder, though, based on what happens every day, on what could happen between now and Election Day, and would it change your votes?
No, because there's no, absolutely not.
Doesn't affect you?
No, because what one thing is going to come out that all of a sudden, my God, that guy did that 20 years ago,
the Access Hollywood
voting.
Tapes?
I don't know.
When's the last bomb that dropped, though?
Careful. Ooh. Bad choice of words today.
Yeah, take that back. I apologize. When's the last big issue that came up this late? I can't remember.
Comey.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, there you
remember
go.
That?
Well, in 80, the Reagan Carter debate was in the last week.
Yeah, that was a big moment.
Yeah, and speaking of Comey, we've never needed the FBI more. Right. And the FBI, not the corrupt FBI. The FBI is out doing their job today, trying to find out who the lunatic is that dropped these packages.
When did Clinton go on Arsenio and play saxophone? Was that in the last
week? That was early.
That was early. Okay. Yeah. Never mind.
Early.
Before we go, ask yourself this question, and both of you do a report and get back to me on this. What is actually mentally wrong with the guy in the White House that he doesn't understand the weight of the office and what's truly needed right now? Now, forget about politics. I'm telling you. There has to be something wrong with you as a human being to not understand the job, the position you're in, and what's needed after what happened yesterday.
You mean other than being a narcissistic sociopath?
Yes.
Okay.
Even
I'll
worse
think
than
about
that.
That. I'll think about that.
Yeah, you couldn't spell both.
No.
But I haven't checked at the office.
It's two C's.
Lincoln Forum, when?
Monday night here at the WGN studios.
Okay. And Rokan hosting?
Yes, LincolnForum.org, Craig Wall from Channel 7, Marion Aiden from Channel 5.
There's only like 40, 50 seats. So you
yeah, we're going to live stream it. But it's going to be, these are the top journalists, I think, in the city. So we'll have a good discussion on where would they think that things are going. And more importantly, probably what's going to happen after the election.
WGNRadio.com/events, I assume, along with the Lincoln Forum website. Sandberg, LincolnForum.org. For the Lincoln Forum event, WGNRadio.com/events.
/events, yeah. I'm sorry. I was reading a text
message. She was buying
shoes
online.
No, I am not. I am reading. Somebody said John Edwards. He dropped out after early voting. And that guy makes me really angry because I don't like what he did. So
I'm not sure that timing's right.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's what I was in the middle of answering.
Yeah, I think it was earlier than that.
But if there was something going to drop, Eric, don't you think it would be dropped by now?
Yeah, I do.
I mean, Oppo Research.
Yeah, usually the final 2 weeks is the October surprise time. So
okay, well, you guys let me know when you're going to drop that information.
All right.
Yeah, okay. Thank you, Beth. Thank you, Eric.
Thanks, Steve.
This is the most amazing part when they walk out together and they have a kumbaya-like hug at the elevator.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you...
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me, kiss me good.
Honey, show just past halftime. When the band clears the field, we go live to Moron Entertainment. Where Dean Richards is standing by right now at Channel 9. Good morning, Dean.
It was visually stimulating.
Yeah, I like to paint a picture. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, Dean. I know you have a list, but did Snoop Dogg really put your picture up?
Yes.
Did you see that, Steve?
You want to explain what that is?
Yeah, Snoop Dogg was in Chicago last week. We had him on the show, and, you know, we took pictures with him. And normally, you know, we post pictures with the celebrities that come by. But Snoop Dogg posted a picture of me on his Instagram page.
Like what? Your headshot?
No, us together.
Oh, the two of you together.
But
okay.
Did he really call you Uncle Baldy, or is that what you
wrote?
No,
that's my new rap name.
What was the caption?
Uncle Baldy.
What did he caption?
I don't remember.
I'll look it
just
up.
Just pin the picture.
Was he trying to hook you up with Martha Stewart? Like playing Jewish mother? Jewish mother Snoop Dogg?
My wish.
Dini, text question.
Steve, it's a good thing.
Dean, the text question of the day is, I can't believe I did it. I never let my kids or my grandkids do it. Here's a couple. Years ago, my husband's grandfather was at a home game at Notre Dame with the family, somehow lost his family at the game, hitchhiked with three different people, and eventually made it home safely to Ottawa, Illinois. The family was happy he was safe, but kind of upset that he hitchhiked home. 619, I'm a woman. I was 18 or 19. A guy I didn't know asked me for a ride. The whole ride, he talked about how brave I was to give him a ride. When he got out, I was relieved to be alive. I'm stupid. 20 years old, lived in New York City. My roommate and I, both girls, got a ride from friends in Hartford, Connecticut. She and I then hitchhiked to Boston for the weekend because we wanted a lobster dinner. Then hitchhiked to Vermont to get a ride back to New York City. Overnight, we slept in laundromats. 630-79, I picked up a hitchhiker in Arkansas. We passed a car with two guys smoking weed. Honked my horn. We were both driving 60. Decided to go really close to each other and pass the weed back and forth.
What is this weed that you speak of, Steve?
And the marijuana. The marijuana. And 630, I voted Republican in the 80s. I wouldn't let my kids do that. That's kind of funny, actually. So there you go. That's the question. What did you do? What would you let your kids do?
I forgot about hitchhiking.
Did you hitchhike?
I never did.
I did.
But I, when I first started driving, when I was a teenager, I would pick up hitchhikers.
You know what Dave calls it?
Idiocy.
Our Uber.
What it was, Dean.
That's what it was.
Our Uber. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, when we come back,
last night, by the way, as a side note, while we're talking weed here for a second.
Yeah, go ahead there, dealer.
Get out of the opening night of Hello Dolly last night. I'll give you my review in a second on that. But we go across, it's at the Oriental Theater. I parked in the Block 37 lot right across the street. Get in the elevator to go down to the parking garage, reeking of the evil weed. Reeking. Mm.
Was Roe there? Oh, that's not what I'm talking about.
I don't know if that's... Is that just something they do at Block 37?
Yeah, I'm sure it was some sort of thematic night they were having there as well. So, Dean, last night I got a call from a good friend at NBC. Said, big day tomorrow for Megyn Kelly. You're going to tell us all about it coming up. Also, the richest people in television. And Dean will review Hello, Dolly, which, by the way, I'm starring in. I'm Dolly.
You know what? It's so nice to have her back where she belongs.
Oh, look what you did there. Wow. No wonder Snoop put your picture up. What's coming up at 8:30?
How many other people, by the way, do you know that have posted pictures of Snoop Dogg and Betty Buckley in the same week?
I can hardly tell the two apart.
Right?
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor. Channel 9720.
All right, we're running. Dean's back. Dean, we're running 30 minutes late on giving away the Hawks tickets I was supposed to give away 30 minutes ago.
Thank you. I'd love to go.
Sandberg, what's the story?
We have a pair of tickets to see the Blackhawks play Edmonton Oilers this Sunday, October 28th.
I'll be at that game.
Courtesy of Four Seasons Heating and Air Conditioning and Plumbing. Are you going to be sitting in the Four Seasons Heating and Air Conditioning
seat? I was going to, but let's give them away instead.
Okay, for all the right reasons, Four Seasons. Find them online at fourseasonsheatingandcooling.com.
Nice plug.
We're also giving away tickets from Four Seasons all season long, so you should listen to the Roe Con Show with Anna DeVlantes for a second chance to win a pair of tickets today at 4:40, and I think they're actually giving theirs away at 4:40.
Everything you said there is true. She's so disappointed in me. John DeCosta will be back tomorrow. We'll start with the...
seventh caller.
The riddles tomorrow. Right. Seventh caller now, 312-981-7200, your big winner. All right, so Dean, I get this call from a friend at NBC last night. And we had a discussion about Megyn Kelly. Said she's out. I go, what do you mean she's out? She's out? She can't be out. They owe her $75 million. And this is fixable. And said, no, she's out. She's out. And yesterday her agency, the CAA, the big talent agency, fired her.
Yep.
Is she out?
Not officially, no. But she is off the air for the rest of this week and may not be returning. Nothing's been confirmed by NBC, but they're going to be running repeat shows today and tomorrow, and I presume they will be deciding on what to do all of this following her defending the use of blackface for Halloween, for which she has apologized, but her apologies are making it worse. The backlash on all of this is getting worse and worse.
Well, because more people are finding out it happened in the first place.
I guess so, but she is not officially fired yet.
The person I was speaking with said she's going to be brought back for NBC's election night coverage and shift to a prominent position in NBC news coverage and also possibly get a primetime show on MSNBC. Which, you know, all that makes sense, frankly.
Is that where they put everybody who makes mistakes on NBC on MSNBC?
Yeah, you know what? I got to tell you something. Brian Williams has never been better. I don't know if anybody ever sees that show because it's late, but it's called The 11th Hour, and he's great on that show.
Yeah. He probably feels liberated.
No, he's making $6 an hour now, but he's great on that show.
So is it a truth show or a lying show?
It is a truth show about truth and reporting, and you can kind of feel him kind of being careful. He's not telling a lot of personal stories anymore. But he was always good. Yeah. He was always good. He did an incredibly dumb thing. He was always good.
Yep.
Kind of the new Peter Jennings. Anybody remember Peter Jennings?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Excellent anchor.
Brian Williams got busted because he told a story that wasn't his.
He told late night. He was great on late night. He was great with Letterman. He was great with Leno. And he told a couple of stories that turned out to be stolen valor.
Okay,
not good. Yeah. All right, Dean. So that's the Megyn Kelly story. Let's talk about people like her making a bunch of money in TV. I have to believe that Judge Judy is still doing fine.
Not on the list of the top paid TV personalities.
What?
Darn it. Brian Williams?
Oh, not anymore.
Definitely not Brian Williams.
Not anymore. Well, go in reverse order. How long's the list?
Well, I've got a long list, but...
do all of them.
I'll just do... we already did the Blackhawks giveaway, so we can't delay that any longer.
Top five?
Top five.
Number five.
Number five, a tie with four of the actors on Modern Family. At number five. Number four.
Wait. Modern Family. Who's dying on that show? I've seen several stories the last couple of days. They're killing off
Not any of the major characters. It's one of the recurring characters.
What's her name's boyfriend?
It's not him.
Yeah, tell you.
Who's dying? Tell me.
Are we allowed a spoiler alert?
I just asked you.
No.
Who is it? What? Tell me.
No.
Cover your ears if you don't want to know.
Do it off air. Do it in
It's his ex-wife.
Oh, Shelley Long?
Oh.
She's been career dead for years. Does that ruin the show for you? Okay, all right.
She should get out more.
I can't watch that show anymore now.
Krasanich and I had TiVo'd all of them. We're going to watch them together this weekend.
Big party. Big Modern Family. They call them, so the two of themselves call each other the
Maybe
Modern
go
family.
With the Real Housewives of Piscataway instead.
Mark Harmon is number four.
Summer School.
Oh, NCIS.
NCIS.
Oh, NCIS.
And then the others, the, let's see, second and third are the three guys from Big Bang Theory.
Okay.
Simon, Kumail, and Johnny Galecki.
Do they all make the same money?
They make roughly the same money. Very slightly
different. I would have thought Jim Parsons would be the guy that takes
it all. But he makes significantly more than all the rest of them, and he is the top paid television personality.
Oh, I see. So the other three. Sheldon Cooper. Got it.
It's Sheldon, the other three in the number two and three spot. Because they tied Mark Harmon.
And Jim Parsons is number one?
He's the number one guy.
What do you make? Did you get?
25, I think it was.
25 million?
25 mil last year.
You sure Judge Judy doesn't make more than that?
Is not on that list.
Okay. Hello, Dolly. You like it?
I loved it very much. Unfortunately, here's one of the deals. I hate this when shows come into town and they, you know, often they provide us footage of the show so we can show it and play it on TV.
Sure,
and
promo clips.
This show is not doing that. They did not provide us anything, and they refused to let me bring a camera to shoot some of it. Hmm. So instead, I found on YouTube a 6-year-old singing Hello Dolly to make up for it. So let's roll that.
Let me hear it.
Well, I tell you about the show.
All right. All right, bring it down just a little so Dee can review over this.
This show, it stars Broadway legend Betty Buckley. Now, you know, Bette Midler brought the show back in April of last year to huge rave reviews in New York. And Betty Buckley is taking the show on the road now.
That's a cute kid.
And she's fantastic in it. She's great. The production's great. It's like a big, good old-fashioned musical with all the bells and whistles and great performances throughout, like this one. Bring the audio up.
Here we go. Let's hear it again. Here's 6-year-old.
Like this great performance.
Sally. Do you know the name of this kid? Because CAA's got an opening at the agency now. So
her name is Katya.
Katya.
6-year-old gotcha. Katya.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I'll let you go, but we had a vicious argument in studio about the show Hello Dolly. I've never seen it. Sandberg hates it.
Oh, really?
I'm not a fan. My stepdaughter Catherine was in Hello Dolly.
But not this production.
No, I haven't seen this production. But the story is a little... She's like a madam, basically, or married. You got to get married.
She's kind of a matchmaker, not a madam at all.
But like these women have to have a man.
No, she's just a matchmaker.
Well, their theater company, maybe they rewrote the story.
They wrote the hooker line into it
for a school.
She had to trick a man, though. She tricked a man into falling in love with her.
Into falling in love with her. She did, but it's all just all very innocent. And, you know, it's kind of like a Fiddler on the Roof kind of thing where there's, you know, somebody who's their...
Matchmaker.
Yeah, their job is to kind of, hook people up.
Well, you know what they've always said about Hello Dolly? It needs a Jew. They've always said that. Hello Dolly needs a Jew.
This show is so good. It's at the Oriental Theater till November 17th. Yesterday, I sat down and talked with Betty Buckley. And tomorrow, I'm going to fill in for John Williams. I'm going to play that full interview.
Well, play. We don't have enough time to hear your Betty Buckley right now. But I want you to tell me all about it tomorrow on John Williams' show. And I know that Betty Buckley and Snoop Dogg are now in a relationship.
With me.
Yes. All right, buddy. Thank you.
See ya.
That's Dean Richards, 828 and a half. Back with the headlines in a moment, and Coach Q on the way. Before we get to any of that, I will remind you that Coach Q will have an opportunity to talk about what a genius he is, and he won't do it. He has an opportunity to explain what a genius he is, and he won't do it. Because as this season rolls on, the Line King has been getting it done. A little bit of a depth problem, Dave, but the Line King is getting it done.
He loves when you call him that.
Right,
dude.
He does. Yeah. So I go, come on, growl.
So,
a couple other texters chiming in on things you did that you wouldn't let your kids do. We used to skitch all the time. What's skitching again? Holding onto a bumper?
Yeah, skitching? And it drags you behind the car.
We used to skitch all the time behind my mom's station wagon in the snow. 815, lived in a 12-story building, used the fire escape to climb up on the roof regularly. 262, climbed the water tower, got to the top, was afraid to climb down, had to be rescued 5 hours later. 847, go to Daytona Beach in high school. What happens in Daytona stays in Daytona. Steve, it's none of your business. 815, years ago, I was 20. I lived in New York City. My roommate and I, both girls, got a ride to Hartford. Oh, we covered that with the laundromat. Sorry. 847, here's another water tower story. I climbed a ladder all the way to the top of the water tower. No surrounding cage, no safety harness. How high are water towers? Are they super high? High enough to kill you?
Yeah, definitely.
Sure.
Yes.
Okay. 414, used to hop trains running from Harvey, Illinois to downtown Chicago so I could have some fun. I'd never let my kids do that now. It wasn't smart then. It's not smart now. And 847, sat on the Belmont Rocks during a huge wave event, about 7 or 8 of us. We thought it would be cool if we got hit by a wave. We locked our arms and got swept into Lake Michigan.
Oh, my gosh. That's dangerous.
Yes. Text question. Things you did you wouldn't let your kids do. Coach Q joins us in just a second. We play the Who for Coach Q, sponsored by Hooters, the original wing joint. Hey, Pete, I got a minute here. Come in quickly and let's fight it out about the football pool.
Oh, I see Coach calling in right now.
We'll give him a chance to catch his breath and dance to the Who. Is Pete with us, or did he leave? Did Pete quit?
He's the one who's answering the Coach Q question or call.
All right, so cancel that order, Pete.
Stretch the cord. Stretch the cord into the studio like we're eighth graders.
We'll come back. We'll come back and tell you who won the first week of the football pool. Good morning, Coach.
Good morning.
Congratulations on a nice start.
Decent start. Had a couple of tough second periods there in back to back games, and I liked how we responded last game. I thought it was one of our better games, start to finish, playing the right way. And that everybody contributed. And I thought the consistency was something we're looking to get, and I think hopefully that can continue, because that was a real nice game across the board. And Crow's been back, and he's had three great games, and that's a great sign.
You know, else was I was very happy to see is Sauter coming around with a goal and an empty netter. That's two goals, kids, for you scoring at home, because it's been a while.
Yeah, Yeah, and it was good to see him play that way, too. I thought the game prior to that wasn't many great performances that night, but I thought he looked like he trended out of that game and really kept going last game and played with Artie and Kaner and got some life, scored a nice power play goal. I thought he did some good things, had the puck way more, had way more speed to his game, and you know, he plays like that. It really helps our team game.
By the way, that's Brandon Saad. I said Sodder because I'm cool like that. Okay. Yes.
Yeah,
we got
it. I like that. Yeah. Everybody knows you're talking about.
Joel, how do you flip the script from a game like Sunday to a game like you played on Tuesday in 48 hours to have that dramatic a difference?
Well, I thought in both games, I thought our first and third periods are pretty solid. And I think we wanted to make sure that and we got off to a good start in that game. We just wanted to talk a little bit about what we didn't do well in that second period. And I thought the puck management had the puck way more. I thought, you know, we had shorter shifts when you do have the puck. I thought we checked better. We did give up some penalties in that period. You know, they had some good opportunities. I think the key is that when you're having momentum go against you, you got to find a way to stabilize it. And I thought we did that in a couple of big shifts after what they did to us. And I thought that even though that they came, it's a 1-1 hockey game after 40 minutes, I still thought, you know, we did some good things in that period and basically we're playing the right way and then had another solid third period. So it was I think more so what we don't do in a second or give the other team credit for what they did. But I think that everybody's going to get momentum in the course of a game or have stretches where they're in control and try to find a way to stabilize it and get back to, you know, having the puck and playing your game.
Coach, you're seeing at the beginning of the season, you saw your big stars, your Taves, your Kane, even DeBrinket, and then we're seeing Saad this week. But Erik Gustafsson has to come to mind as well as a player who is bringing much needed energy and excitement to the team when some of those other players aren't having the the spectacular games that we're used to having.
Well, I thought Gus has had a good game almost each and every night as far as defense. His defense has improved. Offensively, he's always been talented in that area. I think he's confident more so, be it involved with the rush. His patience level of making some nice plays like we saw to Kaner the other day was high-end. Has that ability, but he's really a confident guy with the puck, and I think we want more involvement with our defense, and I thought that last game was our best game across the board with our D being involved, and Gus can lead the charge in that regard for our team, and you know, he's getting some power play time, and overall I think he's improved his overall game. Still a young defenseman, and I think you know, he's made a big step right now, and you know, we're hoping that he can continue on, because you know, the teams that have the puck a lot more, or the teams that are having success, and not just in the offensive zone, but coming out of your own end, a lot of times he's leading that charge back there and make a lot of direct exits as well, which we want.
You know, I'm thinking about bringing back your nickname, the Line King. I think your line, your shifts, your balance in the line's very, very impressive. It's no wonder you're the second winningest coach in NHL history, because you are the Line King.
Oh, you're getting out of control there.
All right, Dave, what else you got for our coach?
Well, and Joel, you should know this, that the other morning we talked to DeBrinket, and Steve suggested to him that he needs to mix it up a little more on the ice and get into it with bigger guys. And then, you know, there he is with Josh Manson the other night. How'd you feel about that?
I think that the way it ended up was okay, but he's in the middle of it. But the one thing about the Cat, he's in the puck area for a little guy. Man, he finds a way to come up with pucks,
scrappy,
or at least and influence pucks. And he's got a tremendous stick, and you know, he's one of those guys that. You know, he plays hard. I don't think he's, you know, he's not a very physical guy, but I mean, he doesn't avoid it. He goes to where you have to go to have success. And but he's a smart player, and I think he's one thing that he does his best is protects the puck in some tight areas, and finds a way to get it back as well. So he's, and he shows that he's competitive, and that's what we like in him.
I'll let you go on this, but one of the things that I think DeBrinket is doing to other teams is really getting in their head. Because you tell me, Coach, but you think back, and I know guys are different size now, but when you were playing, what would be more annoying than a little guy with that kind of puck talent?
Well, I I think the game has changed where, every team's got smaller guys that a lot of times if you're smaller, there's got to be something that jumps out that makes you at least get to our level, and then all of a sudden to be a top guy, then you're doing something extremely special. And his strengths, he's got some quickness to his game. He's a hard-working type of kid. And those guys in the past were, there wasn't many of them around, but now it seems like there's more guys, and the game is all about quickness and speed, and it's a puck possession game, and if you don't have those attributes, no matter what size you are, you're going to have a hard time playing. And so all of a sudden, tonight we got Zuccarello, who's not a big guy, but he's a key guy for them. And those guys they're special with the puck, and they do a lot of things that make their team's offenses go. And I think in the past you'd like to hit those type of guys, but they're hard to hit anyways. And it's the game is not as physical as it used to be, and it's way more about quickness and having the puck.
Rangers are underperforming so far, but don't take him lightly, right?
They're coming off a really good game the other night against Florida. And, I think that they're playing a real good team game. We're talking about our game, but they're coming off a comparable game. I'm sure they're happy with the way they played. They're starting a road trip here tonight. We expect them to be playing well. I wouldn't underestimate this team at all, because they've got a lot of good things going for them the way they're playing. And they've got some team speed as well. And they play, their gap's good. So it's a, we got to be at our best tonight.
Last word, Dave.
I was just going to say another milestone. The other night, Taves played in his 800th game. Brent Seabrook in his 1,014th regular season game tonight. He'll pass Eric Nestorenko for third all-time behind Hull and Mikita in Blackhawks history. Stan number one and Bobby Hull number two. That's pretty good.
That's pretty
company.
Cool. That's pretty cool.
That's great company right there. That's as good as it gets right there. And Seabs has been here from the start. So it's a, not too many players in today's game stay with one team and one organization. And, whether you talk about Seabs, you talk about the pair with him and Dunks. And it's a very remarkable. And, and he's been relatively healthy over the years and plays through a lot of different type of things you're dealing with. And, game in, game out gives us that predictability back there that we want. And so that's a good accomplishment, great accomplishment right here with two of the best of all time.
Coach, I took the hint. The game today is about quickness and speed. That's why I'm not playing, because I've never been about quickness or speed.
Perfect.
But I will be there Sunday night watching you guys tear up Edmonton. We'll get it done first with the Rangers tonight.
All right. Thank you. Look forward to it.
Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Coach.
There you go. You'll be a somewhat healthy scratch.
Yeah. You know what? That's a great way of putting it. Marginally healthy scratch.
Yep.
I like when he told you were out of line.
I just feel bad that we didn't have time to get his thoughts on Megyn Kelly. Because we're just running short on time.
Here we are going into week 6 of the NFL season. Have we started our fantasy football situation yet?
No.
Remember last week I made Pete vice president of fantasy football?
I order you to be quiet.
Order anything he is.
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king then?
I've done a lot of thinking about it. I really have.
Oh, yeah, I don't doubt that.
So what I'm thinking is that each person on the staff here picks one player.
Yes, I love it. Love it.
One player.
Love it.
On what team?
You don't know what you're talking about, Dan.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Well done, Super Joe. Pete Zimmerman's here. Pete doing a great job on the show. I'm not quite sure what he does, but it's great. I've been told it's great.
He has to tabulate all the scores.
So now as commissioner of the Fantasy Football Wang Dang Doodle League, and I know you hate the name, which is why I continue to say it.
I thought he renamed it something else.
You didn't really have a name last week.
You did. You had a really long name.
The Steve Cochran Morning Wig.
Oh, the morning wave.
The morning wave. Yeah. Marty morning wave.
Yeah, that's it.
Former NFL coach.
That's why we're still calling it the doodle. All right, so explain the scoring system.
It's a standard PPR scoring.
Oh, you want the PPR?
Yeah. Okay. So think about that as you're picking.
Points per reception.
That's it.
All right, so if you're a quarterback, are you at a disadvantage?
No. So, for a quarterback, you get a point for 25 yards passing, a point for a reception.
And there are fractions of points.
Right. I think you actually get 0.1 for a completed pass, negative 0.1 for an incomplete pass.
Speaking of negative,
Sandberg is married to Pat Boyle. Mm-hmm. Pat Boyle has been around sports his whole life. Frankly, so has Sandberg. Yeah. And she knows the game well. How did she get negative five?
She's doing a bit.
I'm picking my favorite players, regardless of what type of number they're going to put up.
Yeah, she picked a defense. She picked a linebacker.
How come it says Miami Dolphins, then?
Because it was Kiko Alonso. He's on the Dolphins defense, so I was given the defensive points.
Because the individual players don't get individual points in fantasy on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, we're not playing in an IDP league, individual defensive player.
Look at that.
Oh, why not?
Look at our little Joe.
They had an atrocious outing last week, so they were only able to come up with negative 5 points.
So she's solidly in last place.
She is solidly in last place, but... we're going to add week to week, so she's not out of it. She can easily
come back
in week two.
So the big rule is you pick one player a week, and you can never pick that player again. They're off the board. Dave picked Patrick Mahomes. No one else can pick Patrick Mahomes.
Here's my question. I don't understand how this is going to work, because you have 8 slots.
It's going to get fun in week 17.
Well, thank God we started midseason.
That's exactly right.
We got 8 slots with 8 weeks to go.
Yeah.
Okay, so 64 deep. Yeah. Are there 64 great receivers in the game?
Well, you know, I mean, right now...
I mean, week 16, I'm going to be picking guys that are dead.
Patrick Mahomes and Drew Brees and Dak Prescott were the only quarterbacks taken in the first round. There's plenty of, a Brock Osweiler.
Good guys.
He might come through for you in a week 12.
And you can basically count me as a non-factor, because my picks are not going to be these key receivers.
What happened last year? You were very strategic. Now this year, you're just going with people you like?
Yep.
Okay.
It's your protest. Comedy.
I won out, too, by the way.
Number 7 is Steve Grzanich. Steve Grzanich picked Zeke Elliott. Steve, you're at 8.2 points.
I think he wasn't even there.
Yeah,
somebody
he wasn't
else
here, and
somebody
the one,
picked him.
Yeah, because I was away doing something else, like
Bennett
work.
Did. No,
then,
I picked Zeke for him.
And then I was actually going to pick Adam Thielen of the Vikings.
Well, don't give away this week's pick,
dude. This week.
Yeah, that could be your pick this week. Great.
Well, see, I won out. I'm out.
Yeah, too late. You're already in.
Number 7, so we're going in order here.
This is like the mob. You're in. Number 6, Steve Cochran, who picked Dak Prescott, 20.12 points. Not great. Number 5, my mom. I picked Drew Brees for mom. 24.18 points.
Not bad.
Sandberg, see if this sounds like my mom. She said, oh, that's a good pick. Keep picking.
Plus, she loves Drew Brees.
Yeah, she doesn't want any part of this.
Tell her she can only pick him once.
Number 4, Justin Kaufman with his Matt Ryan pick. Number 3, Super Joe with Saquon Barkley. I told Ross last night that we were going to name him Saquon. And just didn't know how cool it would be someday. Number 2, Mary Vandeveld with Todd Gurley. Who helped you pick Todd Gurley? And don't tell me you knew.
I don't know.
That's a big
secret research anonymous picker.
And number 1,
offspring.
Number 1 is, we like to call him by his nickname, Old Cocky in the Corner, Dave Ennett. Congratulations.
And nobody helped me with the pick.
And you had first pick.
He had the number 1 pick, and he picked Patrick Mahomes.
Is he first again this week, Dave?
He is.
Yeah. Is that how it works now?
We'll pick according to who places. So
it's make it, take it. If you're number 1, you go first the next week.
And then number 2 would be Mary. Like number 3 would be Joe. Okay. And
I just
down
like
the
that.
Line.
I like it because it's going to give Dave the chance to always be in first place.
All right, let's get through these. Come on, people.
Y.A. Tittle is my early pick, though I may change by the time it.
All right, Dave, you're number 1. What's your pick?
My pick, Kirk Cousins, Minnesota Vikings.
Okay. Sparty.
Yeah, he is.
Okay. All right.
I'm going. Am I next?
Yes, Mary.
Oh, I'll pick Melvin Gordon.
Oh, all right.
San Diego, LA Chargers. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Andrew Luck, Indianapolis Colts. Mm.
It's my turn. I would say Kareem Hunt, the Kansas City Chiefs.
All right.
You got a pick for your mom there, Steve?
For my mom, anyone on the New Orleans Saints that's not currently chosen.
Mike Thomas. How about Michael? Or how about
Kamara?
Kamara. Alvin Kamara.
Oh, there you go. Kamara. Yeah. I'm next.
Yes.
I'm going to go with the quarterback of the Chicago Bears in a comeback game.
It's a good pick. Good pick this week.
Oh, wait. Trubisky's the quarterback?
Sorry.
Yeah, Trubisky.
Trending up. And now Steve Grzanich.
I'm going to go with Adam Thielen, the Vikings wide receiver.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I am going with J.J. Watt.
Because you
that
like him.
I'm a big
Texans
fan of J.J. Watt.
Actually, their defense might do pretty well tonight.
Live to the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom next. We'll keep track of those picks so you don't have to. Steve will join us in a second. All right, let's move. move some of your crap. Justin, tell them who's in studio.
Greg Flam, at DuPage Picker, joins us on Thursdays here on the Cochran Show. Greg, good to see you, buddy.
Good to be here. Thank you.
We do the swap meet every week, 312-981-7200. If you got collectibles, memorabilia, if you want them to be evaluated, your junk.
Bring it on.
Now's the time to call. How you doing, buddy?
Move that.
Doing great,
crap.
Thanks.
Move that crap.
Move
that that was the secondary. That's a subtitle for this segment.
Right. Hey, bring it to Wolf's. I might even buy it. So
there you go.
I am fascinated with what I'm.
Yeah, Steve's looking at.
Here.
So okay, so you bring items in. We'll start with some of the things you found this week, and then we'll go to our callers. John and Connie already on the line. 312-981-7200. You can call or text if you got something you want to brag about or something you want to find out what the value is. What do you got today, Greg?
Well, I brought in a random 1986 Northwestern football poster,
and look at that.
I had to do some research to find out who the quarterback was, number 14 in '86. So I'm assuming it's Mike Greenfield.
Mike Greenfield. I see. I was going to say it was Sandy Schwab, but I think he was a few years. Before that.
Wait, how do you not know everything that happened in 1986?
You were calling the Cats then, weren't you?
I was not the voice of the not Cats.
Right. Was that when you were at BBM? Regretting your decision?
No, I was here. Was here. And actually, the Wildcats came here in 88.
Okay, who was the voice of the Cats then?
Well, it was at AM 820 Cozy Radio.
Cozy Radio. I'm not quite sure who was doing it.
What is Cozy Radio? It doesn't exist anymore. Right?
Well, there's the 820 is still there, but
it's not called
Cozy Radio.
I will say,
anymore.
Dave, it's very interesting to look at the 86 schedule and see the non-conference game is Duke.
Duke,
right? They're still playing Duke this day, so that's interesting.
Yeah, and they
still haven't learned.
They went 4-7 that year.
They lost that game 17-6, beat Army and Princeton, and then went on a losing streak. That was Francis Pei was the coach.
And what would they finish the season at?
They finished at 4-7.
The home games were at Dyke Stadium.
Dyke Stadium. Mm-hmm.
And if you wanted to get tickets, you called just 491-7070.
No 800 Go Cats.
Also, Budweiser brought you.
Right.
Yes. What's that worth? Cool. Say to the quarterback's parents.
I could not find any online. To the parents, probably priceless, yeah.
Yeah.
But none online, so it might be starting an auction $15 to $20.
There you go. Yeah. Nice little Northwestern kids.
Yeah, it was just so random. I had to bring it in, obviously.
Did you notice I'm wearing purple today?
Yeah, I kind of saw that on the camera coming in, yeah.
Yeah, nice.
And then brought some other headshots, too.
These are unbelievable.
I know, they're great.
These are unbelievable. It's a stack of some of Chicago's most prominent television personalities from the 60s, 70s, mm-hmm. and even the early 80s.
Right.
And Wally Phillips never looked more studly than he does in this picture.
Wow.
And a lot of them are signed as well.
1972.
Oh, I didn't know he was so handsome.
I have to thank Don Wolf for that. That's on loan from his personal collection.
It's amazing. And is he selling these?
He is, yes. They'll be at the flea market, Palatine, Wolf's flea market.
You didn't say, Steve. It's to Josephine, love Wally Phillips. On May 24th, 1972. So maybe we can locate Josephine.
Right.
Maybe Let's bring her out right now,
right.
Josephine.
Here she is.
How much?
He's got them going for $3 each. So.
Oh, I thought that was $300. They're $3?
Yeah, $3 each at the flea market. They'll be there Saturday morning.
All right, here you go. I think they're worth way more than that.
Maybe now, yes.
You got Floyd Calber in there. You got Roy Leonard.
Wait. Josephine got another one from this guy. Who's this guy?
That's Roy Leonard.
Roy Leonard.
Yeah.
Josephine.
I like the young Bill Curtis one.
There's also Dr. Joyce Brothers.
Here's another Josephine. She was collecting all of them, Josephine.
Did Dr. Joyce work in this market? Joyce Brothers?
Nothing I remember.
Oh, my gosh. Josephine got another one. Yeah. These are all Josephine's. We can't sell these. These belong
walk
to somebody
a fan
else.
There.
I think it says Josephine Wagner.
Yeah, we're going to have to find Josephine and tell her we have her stuff.
I think Joyce Brothers worked in, like, Wisconsin area.
Oh, did she?
Didn't she do in the Madison area?
I don't know.
Well, there's some great names and some great faces.
All right, so you get those. What else?
That's all I brought today. I figured we'd hit the
phones. Let's hit the phones.
Why don't we take one, and then we'll take a break so we can...
Who do you want?
Let's go with John in Arlington Heights.
All right, there we go.
John, welcome to the swap meet.
Hey, John.
Hi, good morning. Right. I've got this Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band live, 1975 to 1985, five album set.
I know that five album
set. It's got a book in it, 36 pages, color photos and lyrics, and it's unopened.
That's better. That's right, my wheelhouse, and I have a story behind that. It was between the Bruce Springsteen box set and Garth Brooks that changed the industry. Because before that, the industry rated platinum records on how many were pressed. So Kiss and bands like that would press just a ton of their stuff, and they went up in warehouses. Well, when these box sets came out, they took up so much room that they said, we have to change the way we do this. So now they the platinum records are based on sales.
On sales as opposed
to press. So there's that's a good backstory there. But Sealed, that might be more than 100 hours auction, maybe.
John, why have you not opened it? Do you hate Bruce Springsteen?
Well, I just picked it up this last weekend at an estate sale, and before I opened it, I wanted to find out what it was worth because I'm dying to open it.
Is that the one with Bruce just with his guitar off his hip walking across stage?
Yeah, there's floodlights on the floor there.
Yeah,
do not open that. I'm sure you can find another one at another garage sale for $5. So
very cool.
Try not to open that because that's really cool.
It's like having all the unopened Halloween candy. Like right now, don't open it. Yep. Don't open it. Save it.
By the way, if you can get to the Springsteen's house, always big candy bars.
Oh, there you go. Larger ones. Yeah. Stuff.
Right. Connie, Craig, Bill, and Jim, when we come back.
Flam, at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter. We're evaluating your collectibles, your memorabilia, your junk. 312-981-7200. All right, let's get to some of these calls, see what you think. Let's rack them up. Let's start with Connie.
Connie is on the northwest side.
Good morning. I have an issue of Life magazine special edition, and it's entitled To the Moon and Back, and it has the entire story of when the fellow went on the moon. All the pictures, all the stories.
Your Neil Armstrong moon landing, that kind of thing?
Yep, 1969.
Those go normally for $20 to $40. So,
really?
And there's quite a few available right now, so you might want to hold on to it longer, or
what is the deal with Life magazine? I know everyone has. Is there one that everyone has, or one that is
highest?
Most...
are Marilyn Monroe and the Beatles. Those
what
are
about
the
JFK assassination?
Those are people tend to hold on to those longer, so they're not worth as many or as much because there's so many of them.
What about anything with Beyonce? No,
I could not tell you.
Not so much.
Yeah, not on my radar these days.
Okay. Next, let's go to Craig in Bloomingdale. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning, guys. It's a long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thanks.
I have magazines called Who's Who in Baseball. It's a little size, maybe Reader's Digest.
Right.
From 1986 to 2016, they first started at $3.95, then it went up to $9.95.
Right.
I was wondering if these things are worth anything because they're no longer in print.
Yeah, some are.
2 years ago.
There's many online, and they're about $12 to $15. They can go upwards of $40, $50, depending on who was on the cover and so forth. But average is about $12.
I'll buy them just for the names. The 80s baseball players. This is my kryptonite.
There you go.
That's your Biff Pokeroba.
Oh, my gosh.
Remember when he kept trying to get us to get every 80s White Sox on this season?
Well, then he also wanted to do every guy with a funny name that ever played in baseball.
Oh, my gosh, we can go on.
And he wanted like a final battle to be Pete LeCocq versus Biff Pokeroba. Bill's in Danville. Hi, Bill.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. In 1966, the Ideal Toy Company made a Justice League playset that contained... among the actual diorama and vehicles and that, 2-inch tall, hand-painted figures, Batman, Robin,
right.
Superman, Wonder Woman, Flash. And Aquaman, all those which I have in loose figures. And I do have, they're in decent shape, a little bit of wear. I do have the snap-on capes for Batman, Robin, and Superman.
Nice. All right.
And I just kind of wondering what these are. The Batman and Robin I've had since I was a kid.
Let me ask you a question. If you sell these, would you be willing to wear a cape yourself when the person comes over to pick them up?
A cape and a cowl.
Nice. All right.
It might be worth it because you're probably looking at over $1,400 for the whole lot, maybe a lot more.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah,
those are big time.
I'm just looking at prices here.
Look at you, Bill.
Figures, $167 opened, loose figures. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
What about a Legion of Doom playset?
Because
that was the bad guys, the Justice League guys. Everyone loves the Batman and the Robins and the
yeah. I
but
mean,
the Legion of Doom was
wasn't
Lex
that later though?
Joker.
Yeah, wasn't it? I would assume they made that
Later.
'80s or something like that, which is still probably worth something. But yeah, in the
'60s,
that's
how they would say it on the cartoon.
That's how the that's how the Justice League ride at Great America goes too. That
does it. Meanwhile,
back at headquarters.
Yeah, that's exactly what.
Right. Yeah. What if you had like a 1970 original Stratomatic baseball game? I'm talking about the board game with the dice. And still packaged, ready to go with the original player card. Stratomatic Baseball, 1970.
If it's mint, never been played, that could be $300 to $400 and up.
Yeah, and I don't have it anymore. Yeah. I just want to know if I did
I
have it.
I sold an old used one for like $65.
You had Stratomatic Baseball?
Yeah, I had that.
My man!
I found one that had over 100 cards in it. And what was weird is they never put...
baseball game
I grew
ever.
Up with that, too. I played it.
Mm-hmm. How about a 1977 Luke Skywalker... without a leg.
Oh, you got the no
Your
leg?
Your personal collection, right?
It's a limited edition one leg Luke.
Yeah.
What about a G.I. Joe with a firecracker?
Yeah, people buy those for parts, so still myself.
For parts.
The missing a leg.
That's tremendous. Jim's in Brookfield. Jim.
Hi. I absolutely love this segment of your show, Steve.
Thanks.
You and both, Steve, your crew is the best. I love this show, waking up to you every
morning.
Oh, you're
a good man. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. So I have I don't know what year it is, but it's a Foot Locker with stickers. Not stickers. They're part of the whole outside of it with Dick Butkus, Terry Bradshaw, and like maybe eight other guys that I really don't know, but it's...
So, like a NFL Foot Locker with NFL legends on it. It sounds like that's what you're describing.
Well, they're not legends. This is their original. So they might have been still be playing.
Oh, this is before they were legends.
I'm not sure what year it was.
Legendary legends.
So did you? They came with.
they are now.
They came with these stickers on the Foot Locker, or did you put them
on
there?
They're not stickers. They're part of it. It was sold as the way you.
You stumped me on that
found
one.
It.
Yeah, you stumped me. If you could send a picture to my Facebook page, I'd be happy to
research
it.
Yeah, hold on. Let's get to the contact.
This is one of a thousand things that I have found over the last 50
It sounds
years.
Awesome. I'm interested.
Well, that's good. We have a guaranteed caller every week for 1,000 weeks now for swap meets.
No kidding.
There we go. Also, can I ask from a different generation, what's a Foot Locker?
Like
I thought that's
little...
where Pete worked in high school.
Pete did work at a Foot Locker. He sized people's shoes, and he wore the little uniform.
It was a little box.
I'm assuming it's a little box.
No, it's a Foot Locker. It's like in the Army, they put their stuff at the end of the bag. Come on, Dave, you know what a Foot Locker is, right?
It's a trunk.
a trunk.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Like a padlock.
That's where I got my Georgetown Hoyas.
Dave is the same age as my parents.
That's where Dave keeps most of his stuff still. Hey, Greg, before you go, the general rule about baseball cards, if you will, because Carol in Grays Lake has a 1905 signed card. 1905.
Wow. I can't even imagine what that's worth. But generally, pre-1980 is what people are looking for, or even pre-70s, to be honest.
And what is mint condition? No folds?
Baseball cards is very picky. You should send it in. If you think you have a mint one, you probably don't. I would send it in, and it costs about $12 to $14 to get it graded.
Send it in to who?
PSA is one to get it graded. You can look them up on Google, just baseball card grading service. There's two or three of them.
All right.
Yeah.
Next week, same bat time, same bat channel.
Sounds great.
Meanwhile.
Meanwhile, Greg puts his snap-on cape on and heads for his car.
Pow.
Good to see you, man.
Thanks for having me.
And it's Wolves this weekend for you?
Yep, every Saturday and Sunday through winter.
There you go. That's the great Greg. Not just your average Greg. That's the great Greg.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
I was singing in the rain. I was calling.
Texter's still texting in. You got a last chance of 312-981-7200. Stuff you did you'd never let your kid do. This may be my favorite, the leader in the clubhouse. The day after grade school graduation, my friend Rita and I drove our bikes from Berwyn to Buckingham Fountain down Ogden Avenue. On the way home on Ogden, I got a flat tire, and the old man at the car repair place gave me a gun for safety as we walked our bikes on. Whoa. Nicely done.
That's a good, that's
tell him who's here.
All right. Let's talk to the creators of Studio B, a new web series that really takes
Looks a good look at the world of studios and sound engineering and what it takes to put music to track. Julie Nichols and Billy Bungaroth are two great stalwarts who know a little bit about music and comedy. Both of them big members of the music community and worked at Second City here in Chicago. And Billy and Julie are in studio
Welcome.
With us today.
Thank you.
Good
to be
guys.
Here.
It's good to see you guys. And
it's great.
It's really great. And congratulations. This series just launched this week. Stars T.J. Jagodowski and a number of tremendous.
And explain where people would know TJ most readily.
Well, he's TJ and Dave is the big show that's in Chicago, and he's also one of the guys in the Sonic commercials.
Yeah, there it is.
There it is. Let's talk. I love this project because I know both of you, and you both have had tremendous careers in both comedy and music, and I love how they kind of come together. Talk about where this project, this idea comes from.
Well, I think that's exactly it. We both have worked in comedy and music, and we wanted to kind of do something that, you know, employed both of those things. So obviously both of us worked at Second City for years and years, and the Second City main stage cast is in a lot. I toured for, I don't know, about 10-odd years playing R&B music. Julie toured playing music, and we've met so many weirdos along the way.
Show business.
We were like, exactly. And we were like, we don't have to look too far, you know, and just both of us, I think both of us love being in the studio so much and we love recording. If there was a situation like Motown or Stax where you could be the house band, like that's our ideal.
That's it.
So yeah. I think a lot of our work, sometimes we fantasize that. And we wanted to do something. I mean, I've had so many bizarre experiences. You know, I recorded in Montreal with one of the members of Arcade Fire. We've recorded with Steve Albini here, mm-hmm. who is a consultant on the project.
He wears that jumpsuit, right?
He always wears
that
jumpsuit.
Jumpsuit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In the series.
Yeah, he wore the jumpsuit to our party the other night.
Yeah, always on brand.
Always on brand. But yeah, so we've had a lot of bizarre experiences, you know, just with the personalities.
Yeah, right.
And it's so, you know, people don't know all that goes into making a record.
There's two parts of this. There's obviously the great and tremendous weirdos that mm-hmm. will come through any studio, bands and what happens in the studio. But there's also that iconic main character that TJ plays of the legendary sound producer, the
yes.
legendary sound engineer. Take us yeah. through that character.
Who just got back from rehab.
Who just got back from rehab.
Of course he did.
But that's
right.
That's part of it. There's two storylines, but that's a big part of it.
Yeah, and a big part of it too is how he works with the younger engineer played by Asia Martin, who's like this engineer extraordinaire and this brilliant artist, and kind of how they have a relationship together.
Absolutely. So, all right. You know, it's funny because I was thinking about watching when I was watching it. I was like, I've heard so many stories of sound engineers in Chicago and other places mm-hmm. talking about the eccentric artists that come through. R. Kelly comes to mind as one who every person who's ever worked with R. Kelly is like, I got some stories to tell. Like, that's just the way.
Yeah. Eccentric slash criminal.
Yeah. Well, criminal aside. But that's part of it. I mean, it's almost makes it minds for easy comedy when you're creating situational
right.
comedy because of the eccentric nature of the bands that come through.
Well, that's part of the reason that this was appealed to us is, you know, obviously when you're doing a series, you're sort of like, okay, well, what would this be like in 5 years? And then this is actually something where, like, okay, each episode has a guest star. That makes sense. Each episode has an original song. That makes sense. And you could literally go on forever. I mean, we covered three recording genres in these episodes, and you know, I mean, we could go on forever with various
right.
recording genres. So I think that was a big part of it, is like the stories can go on. I know when I was sort of researching through friends, one of the great stories I heard was a band who asked the lead producer on a record to a lead singer who asked the producer to break up with his band while he was in the control room. It's like, I can't even face them. Will you go out there and tell them I'm not finishing the record?
It's like, a little awkward.
It's like the Metallica documentary.
So the people you have coming in, each series has a band that's trying to make a record or a song. Are they in on that this is comedy, or are they playing it straight, like they're really making a record and this isn't?
I think they're playing it straight. You know, it's like the studio needs for the...
for the artist coming in to be a hit so they can stay afloat. And the artist needs for it to be a hit so they can stay afloat.
It's a cool premise.
How fun is it to be able to, I mean, I would assume you guys are at the genesis of creating the music that the band is performing, the songs, the original songs.
It's the best part. For me.
And where's the music going to live?
Well, the music is on iTunes. You can download it on iTunes. It also lives on the website itself.
StudioBSeries.com?
It's StudioBSeries.com. That's right. Yeah. Right. And on iTunes under music from Studio B. But for me, like having worked in Second City for so long and having written for 10 years basically just comedy songs, which is super fun, it was really great to be writing quote-unquote real songs, songs that like the band, like it's in episode 3, just like just like a solid good song.
See, that's cool. That's cool, because I would think that you guys have stacks of songs that you didn't have anything to do with through the years, and you still love the songs, and now you're going to fit them in. No,
I mean, absolutely, that's also 100% true. So absolutely. Yeah, there was some that we wrote specifically for these characters and for these arcs, and then some that are just like, man, we've got these great songs, they've been sitting on a shelf and they need a home, and like what a great place for them to find a home.
Artistically, is this a project that is a passion project for you guys? Is it ambitious in the way that this is your reel for what might be something for the networks or for Hollywood to see? How do you approach creating a web series in 2018?
Absolutely, yes.
I think that part of it is basically trying to use the best of what we do. And again, even when TJ and I were starting to assemble the writers, we were like, what's something that we would be fine if we were doing like 11 years from now?
So you're open to a lot of cash and great offers from all networks.
Tons of money. That? Okay, that any seems, offers you want.
Seems very forward thinking, buddy.
Are there bands, real bands that you've worked with in your past that will see this series and say, they're mocking me? That's me that they're mocking.
That's a great question.
It's like if they do, then it's like, that's on you.
That's a great question.
There might be. And there's
what
also
a great way to get revenge.
Yeah, right? Yeah, we've only just begun.
I think ideally we actually would be working with, like, so many bands and musicians I've worked with actually also really want to be actors.
Right.
Yes. So my hope is if we can keep making these, that we can work with actual,
But every comedian wants to be in a band and sing. Every comedian in town's probably approached you, right?
We've had a lot of people approach us who want to be involved and like, I know what character I can play on this,
The amount of rock stars that want to be funny musicians and the amount of
funny people that want to be rock stars.
Yeah. I mean, Eddie Murphy wanted to be a rock star. Yeah. Like, it's
by the way, I have his red leather jumpsuit if you need it.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're
well, you can wear it on an episode, then.
I can, I got it. They put it in big and tall for me. Last word.
The one thing, talk about the cast. There's so many Second City people that are in this, but it is fun. It's great to see such great Chicago talent being represented.
Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, so there was a lot of members of the main stage cast that was together in April, which is Ryan Asher,
Jeff Murdoch,
Tien Tran, Kelsey Kenny, and Tyler Davis, Nate Verone. I mean, like the whole cast.
You're going to see all these people on.
And they're all for you guys. So amazing. And
good for you guys for putting them to work.
Right.
TJ, Asia Martin, upcoming comedian.
Max Thomas,
another great Marcel Wilkes, also known as Mr. Greenweed, who I'm sure you've probably had on.
By the way, I have Dick Wolf's cell phone. See, somebody called Dick Wolf for a little something I call Chicago Recording Studio.
I'm telling you.
There you go. There's your new series.
Just shoot him a quick text.
That's all I need.
Like,
it has
a great
to be
project.
Very dramatic. There needs to be a crisis every episode.
There is, though.
Someone's in extreme danger.
I can't imagine we could go a day in a studio without a crisis.
There is a crisis every day. That's the fun of it.
You can find the series at StudioBSeries.com.
It looks great. I look forward to
seeing it. Billy Bunkeroth, Julie Nichols.
Thanks,
good
guys.
To see you guys.
Great to see you, too.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Billy Bunkeroff, I worked for his father when I first came to Chicago. Really? He was a general manager at FM 100.
Oh, interesting.
Good guy.
Yeah, Billy was in the band J.C. Brooks in the Uptown Sound, which was a lot of Chicagoans know that band.
Billy was in my studio back then when he was about 9 or 10. Texters texting in stuff I did that I wouldn't let my kid do. As a college student at Indiana State in Terre Haute, we'd explore the cemetery late at night, climb down into the underground crypts.
Okay, that's
we can't approve that.
That's a lot of
630-1977, driving my custom van, picked up a chick hitchhiker in Naples, Florida. 1977, it was a chick. She was going a mile or so home. We stopped at her house. She grabbed some clothes and spent a week with me in the Keys right after I met her. Mm.
Oh, by the way, she won the wet t-shirt contest.
Sure, he wasn't in Winslow, Arizona?
It does sound like that. That's an Eagles song. 847, a classmate and I took the L and buses to the Cubs opener when we were in fourth grade.
Wow. Yeah, I hear a lot of that.
Yeah, you don't have a lot of fourth graders going, your mom and dad going, hey, listen, stop bugging me. Go take the L to the game with your friends.
Arguing with the bus driver about the transfer.
630, we drive to Grand Haven in Grand Rapids, Michigan in the early 80s. On our way home, while drinking, got close enough to the other car that we passed them a beer while flashing others along the way.
Oh, my gosh.
Hijinks.
I only know that from the Grey Poupon commercials. But you're stopped at a stoplight usually when you hand that out the... window.
That's not flashing and right now drinking. That's mustard.
My husband added spicy mustard to our grocery list last night.
I thought that was his nickname for you.
My dad used to love the Grey Poupon.
Yeah.
Oh,
who doesn't?
Man.
So good.
And don't you want to know the woman that got the gun when she was a little kid so she'd get home safely? I want to know the guy that gave her the gun, that she had the gun, and if she ever gave the gun back.
Yeah, we never heard the end of the story.
Listen, honey, I'm going to lend you a gun so you get home safely. How old are you, 10? All right, don't shoot anyone unless you have to. Tremendous. Bill and Wendy coming up, 720 WGN, and we'll get to Steve in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom next. Text question was, things you did as a kid that you can't believe you did, that you'd never let your own kids do. Wendy, I'm going to go with everything.
Yeah, there were a lot.
For you. Bill, you got anything?
I once talked my brother out of jumping off the roof of our house.
Good talk.
You shouldn't do that.
Can I talk about this on stage as a joke, but this actually happened. Jarts?
Yeah.
Outlawed in all 50 states?
Yes.
Once parents weren't looking, we'd split up into teams on other sides of the house, and we'd throw them over the roof at each other.
Oh.
Good God.
You had to dodge the giant Game of Thrones metal spike coming at your head.
And that taught you lessons.
Yeah. Duck.
Yeah. Lessons.
Duck, left, right. Move. A lot of lessons. Right. Yeah.
Duck and cover.
Agility.
There were no injuries for this?
My cousin Dougie.
Oh.
But we had other cousins.
Yeah.
They weren't that sharp, quite honestly. But coming down at that high of a... Yeah, that would go through your foot.
Not good. Or other parts of you. What are you guys doing today?
We have a Bill Geiger impersonator coming on.
To give you fake retirement information?
Bill Saucedo has been impersonating Bill Geiger for 3 decades.
I had no idea. Is John Williams doing something with him at the...
At the Rialto.
The Rialto.
We're back tomorrow. Here's Wendy.